I'd like to call this meeting of the Legacy Funding Committee to order. We do have a quorum, and I'd like approval of the minutes for Monday, April 13th. Representative Miller moves approval of the minutes. Those in favor say aye. Opposed? It carries. Our main item of business today, or really the only item, is to do the omnibus bill, pass that on. We'll be referring it to the tax committee. But there may be a recess or two in the course of this today because of other committees going out at the same time and the need to vote. And so Ways and Means is meeting. I know taxes are meeting. So we'll just kind of play it by ear and see what we have to do. But the first thing that I would like to do is the DE5 amendment. This is the amendment that puts the language in the legacy bill that I would like to have. It'll be the bill that we then debate today. Any discussion on that? Those in favor of the amendment, DE5, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. We're now on the bill. What I would like to do is just take a moment or two here to give some general comments before I speak more specifically to the bill. First of all, I appreciate the cooperative work that has been going on, members of the committee, members of the audience, lobbyists. Last week, of course, we put the bill out for a public review, and I just, after the response, I think that maybe some just general comments might be helpful in performing a little attitudinal adjustment here. In our first meeting this year, I spoke of the feelings of entitlement that I felt had been growing among some folks since 4 years ago when I chaired this committee. And I just want to emphasize for all that there is no such thing as a cut in legacy funding. Over the weekend, I'm sure many of you received messages that we were cutting some group. There's no such... Everything that we do in legacy is extra. The baseline is zero for legacy funding. And we need to understand that. There's no guarantee each year or each biennium of getting the same amount that you did before or increases. It's kind of like if your grandfather always gave you $100 on your birthday and then 1 year he gave you $75. Did you get mad at your grandfather? And what happens if your grandfather doesn't give you anything the next year? This year, we had $28.7 million more in requests than we had money. And yet, what we have found is that not all of them, but a lot of the entities each year increase their request. And it just doesn't work to do it that way. It's unwise, also, to only fund the same entities at increasing amounts. I think it's good occasionally to fund a different group and not just the same every single biennium. And so we have to keep that in mind for the future. And so there are some new recipients included in this bill. My goal is to be fair, to serve the people as they expect to be served through legacy money. And please understand it as I repeat in this bill and in going forward, I hope, through the work of other chairs in the future, as has been, I think, the work of chairs in the past, that there are no entitlements and there are no cuts in legacy funding. So that's my little soapbox for the day. You don't have to clap. It's okay. It's with that, I'm going to, I think, do most of my presentation from here. And there are several amendments that we need to do that are basically technical corrections that we need to do here. So we'll take those first. Then we will get into a run-through of the bill. We'll have Representative McNamara with Outdoor Heritage first, and then Representative Torkelson. And then I will finish up with Arts, History, Culture, and Parks and Trails. And then we'll take public testimony, and then we will do the rest of the amendments. So that's your agenda for the day. The first amendment, though, that I would like to do, these, again, more technical ones to get out of the way right away, A13, the Wills Amendment, and I do not see her here. She's in taxes. This corrects language from last year's bonding bill. This language was from a cash portion of the bill, so the Children's Museum in the Twin Cities wanted this language included just as a backup to similar language that was included in the Capital Investments Technical Corrections Bill. Are there any questions on that? Representative Kahn.
In the absence of Representative Wills, I'm willing to move it.
Oh, thank you. It's been moved by Representative Kahn. Any other discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. The next one, A17. On page six, and I will move this one, my amendment. On page 67, line 18, insert. The grants must be based on the recommendations to the commissioner from the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails. And there is someone who wishes to testify to this. Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Wafel. I'm a lobbyist with Flaherty and Hood. I am here on behalf of the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Organization. And just a brief explanation of this. This was contained in the original HF 1531 bill appropriating money to the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails, Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. And basically, the last two biennium, we have worked on a process where the DNR was the one doing the evaluation of grants to Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails. After the legislature created the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission last session, we are moving to a model where the commission will actually be doing that grant evaluation. However, the money will still be flowing, at least for this biennium, through the Department of Natural Resources. So what this language simply does is recognize that the commission will actually be making the recommendations. And we worked on the original bill language and ran it by the Department of Natural Resources, and I spoke with the Department of Natural Resources again right before the hearing and confirmed that they're okay with this language. So, simply recognizes that the commission will be making recommendations.
Thank you. Any discussion on this? Representative Kahn.
So the process is, do the recommendations come to the legislature, or does the legislature get to review these or not?
Representative Kahn, ultimately they would.
Well, they would be going to the commission sort of through the same process that they were doing before. So, I don't know if I need to bring the commission up here, but, the way that the process worked before is that it would go to the commissioner. So, and I don't know that it would run back through the legislature.
Representative Kahn.
I'm interested in legislative review more than legislative decision. At what point does this committee get to look at those recommendations?
Ms. Wepple?
I would say the commission would, I'm sure, would be happy to provide their decisions for review.
I would think that in the future we should be able to see the recommendations before they are acted upon.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just saying, we didn't see them this year, did we?
No.
I do have one of the things I do have a little problem with is that in comparing, we tried to make this process to be similar to the Met Council process, and the thing that the Met Council is very clear, Met Council's process is very clear about is a delineation of what regional parks is. We clearly never wanted this money to go to the standard small neighborhood park area. So we really wanted showing youth throughout the region and even preferably beyond the region. And I just wondered, and I've been a little fuzzy as to how well the Greater Minneapolis Parks and Trails Council has been doing that. So, obviously not before we pass this bill. We're not going to get to do that. But I'd like that on the record for us to fully understand that process and to look at the proposals and to see if they are adhering to see, one, that they set some standard for what a regional or natural resource park is, and one, are they adhering to it?
And so. Representative Kahn, of course, you know, this commission is new and, just, I believe, formulating what they
That's why we
do
told them
future.
What to do.
And that, exactly, Representative Kahn. And so I think that these suggestions should be taken and that when you are formulating your plans for the next go-around, that they are submitted to us. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. My question is similar to the first one Representative Kahn asked. It's just, I mean, I don't see any language in the amendment suggesting that there is any legislative review of this. I mean, it seems it's actually kind of the opposite. It says the grants must be based on these recommendations. It doesn't say subject to legislative approval. It doesn't, or anything, with the Clean Water Council, SARD SAMS, I know we have the ability to, we generally take those recommendations very seriously. But and oftentimes adopt them all, but I just, the way this is worded doesn't seem to give us much input in the process at all.
Ms. Weeple?
Chairman Erdahl and Representative Freiberg, the process is that which was laid, and I think Representative Kahn was asking a question about this as well. During the presentation that Tom Ryan, who's the legislative chair of the Olmsted County Parks, he's director of Olmsted County Parks and director, legislative chair of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission gave, I believe it was a month or two ago, they do have a formal process that is being used, and it is basically it was outlined in the system plan that was delivered to the legislature in January. They are undertaking a very rigorous process for designation of regional parks and trails. They made the first, and this was discussed with the committee, I believe, like I said, 2 months ago. They designated the first 19 of the regional parks and trails. The criteria was set up in accordance with the legislative directive, and so there is a rigorous process that's in place, and the reports have been submitted to the legislature and are available. So,
Representative Murphy?
Okay.
Further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Nay.
Passed. One more. And I will move this as well. Page 80, line 23, remove disabilities and insert disability. It's just a grammatical correction.
Page what?
Page 80, line 23, remove the word disabilities and insert disability. Again, it's mainly grammatical, I think.
Would you say the page again?
80. Any discussion on that? It is. It's the State Council on Disability.
On disability.
Not disabilities.
Oh, okay.
All right. Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. And now I will move under House File 303 the DE5 amendment. and move that this be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. So at this point, then, we will begin our walkthrough, but
don't we need to substitute? We did do that. Did we substitute?
Yes, I'm sorry. We have to vote on it. Those in favor of the substitution, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Did we?
Okay. Just a high overview here. The 303, House File 303 as amended, appropriates to the Outdoor Heritage Fund for this year $99,993,000. The clean and of course the only one of our four funds that has an annual appropriation is Outdoor Heritage. They would be receiving a like amount next year as well. Clean Water Fund, $226,202,000. Parks and Trails, $89,351,000. And Arts and Culture Heritage Fund, $124,215,000. And so, with that, I think we will begin with the Outdoor Heritage, and maybe Mr. Johnson can, or Denny, Representative McNamara. You can go up together. It's okay.
Welcome. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Representative McNamara. You may make your presentation on the Outdoor Heritage.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, do you want me? I could go through a real high level and kind of talk about a little bit and what I see there is. And then do you want Mr. Johnson, to Executive Director Johnson, to go through each item, or what's your thoughts?
Well, my thought was, you know, there haven't been changes. We have gone through this before. We don't need to go into as much detail as the first time, but still give a good sense of what it is.
Mr. Chair, if you could just 1 second. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe what I'll do is just walk through it at a high level, and just so I think most folks are aware of the bill as in its current form just has a couple of differences. One project on the spreadsheet, Mr. Chair, I'm working off of the spreadsheet. Chair Heinzman, I'm working off of on line 37, the accelerated shallow lakes and wetlands enhancement phase 7 has been increased by the $2.188 million. And then, Mr. Chair, the decrease was in the, apologize, in line item on the first page, line 19, protecting forest, wildlife habitat, and the wild rice watershed. That one was reduced by the 2.188. And then the other one from the policy, there's the policy about the LCC and how that personnel policy has been changed. And then there was a mistake in the original in the administration. We booked it all in the first year, and the DE splits that out. So that correction is made. So with that, Mr. Chair, I think it would probably be best if Mr. Johnson walked through the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, we can do that. Do you want him to touch on every project that's already been done once, or would you rather us just stand for questions? I think everyone knows what the issues are.
Well,
Just at first, if Mr. Johnson could state his name for the record, and then if we have some questions.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Mark Johnson, Executive Director for the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council.
Are there any questions? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, Mr. Johnson. I don't have any changes or grievances about what you have, but you have considerably much more money than the arts and culture have. And I thought one of the purposes of the Outdoor Heritage Council was to create habitat and make hunting and fishing more accessible and more people entering into hunting and fishing. And teaching youngsters about the great outdoors and beyond, and the great values that people of all ages receive in sharing the wilderness and the nature and the outdoors. Is there anything that I've said that's wrong?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, no, I think you kind of summed it up.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Johnson and Mr. McNamara, Representative McNamara, we have on the spreadsheet, I don't know which one I'm using, but we have two things, Big Marine Veterans Camp, which we've funded before from the arts and culture money. And we have a new interesting experiment that's been going on for some time but not receiving state funding. And it's called the Wilderness Inquiry. And when they came before our group, I questioned whether they had applied to the Outdoor Heritage Fund for funding, and they said no. They had just come to the Arts and Culture Fund. And yet, both of these requests for funding, which are on our spreadsheet, were saying that they do the kind of things that I mentioned in my opening remarks. I suspect the arts, or I expect the outdoor fund has not got a category that would be open to requests of the nature of the Veterans Camp or the Wilderness Inquiry Experience. And I would like to suggest that you take it very seriously that that is also part of the Outdoor Heritage Fund's responsibility to promote more people having access to the wilderness and the outdoors and learning to fish and learning to hunt and be receptive, or even, if I could be so bold, take a part of the at least the $607,000 in the future, or million, in the future, set some of that money aside for groups to apply to fulfill your mission, and let the arts money, arts and culture money, be spread to other people.
Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy, we do have the CPL grant program in the outdoor heritage part of the bill that potentially both of those could apply to. You know, the big marine may qualify as far as enhance, protect, restore habitat. The Wilderness Inquiry might have to change their mission and what they were doing to actually qualify for a grant at this point. And I think even the veterans camp, the way it was presented, I don't think either one would qualify to meet the statutory and constitutional requirements of that part of the dedicated funding.
Even, Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, even under the CPL grant description?
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy. I think if they were to inquire with staff about the requirements of the CPL, they might be able to see if part of their mission could qualify. And I think that's a possibility. Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I actually really like their program. I'm a fond supporter of it and have been impressed with what they're doing. And I think they would need to modify a specific application. They would need to modify it to meet the requirements, but they could find out. But their basic mission for what they do, I think in reality in both cases, probably don't qualify. But that's not to say that they couldn't do an extension of what they do to qualify.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, Mr. Johnson, I think that we should seriously consider the constitutionality of how to make them eligible to meet the requirements, because when Wilderness Inquiry appeared before us, especially the amount of money that they were asking was a lot, and I'm not sure how much culture in some people's minds that is part of. Whereas it seems, for what they explained, seems to be everything that's part of outdoor heritage. And so we've got some time now because they're in this bill, and I expect that's going forward. I don't see any amendment that addresses them, and so we've got some time. But to talk about it in the interim.
Okay.
But I think your door should be open, or your wilderness should be open.
Yes. Representative McNamara's door to the wilderness is always open. You're right, Representative McNamara.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy, yes, I think we need to continue the discussion.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
For both of them, as long as you were the first that to come up here, but I can save some time, although Representative Torkelson isn't here, but they would both fit under the Clean Water Council's mission also. they both, the people are learning to kayak and go out on the waterways, and so it's much more than taking pictures and drawing diaries of what they're seeing.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I would be more than happy to sit down with those groups if you would like and talk to them about our current constraints from a statutory standpoint and if there are any ways that we can overlap or they might be able to overlap into our funding.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Kahn.
Yeah, let me second what Representative Murphy has said. And what I've asked, you know, ever since I've been involved in this, is to look at more projects which kind of involve all the four parts of it and that cross-cut, because all of them must work together if we're really going to have to meet the basic principles of the legacy amendment. And so I think, you know, looking at the Constitution, not into checking every word of the statute, but looking at the Constitution, it's clearly... Both of those clearly fit into the one line in the Constitution that deals with the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And if there are any and changes to the statutory language are simply made by whatever we put in this bill. So it's something, as we assemble the final bill, I think that we ought to look at seriously.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Johnson, are you... Yes, going to add to this now? Is that the plan here?
The plan going forward, Mr. Chair?
Since I missed a little bit here when I went out to Ways and Means, I want to know what...
Mr. Chair, just with regards to the entire bill and whether there are other comments I have to add to it, one thing very quickly, if I may, as you notice, the bill is broken into subdivisions. I think there are five different subdivisions of the projects themselves. In most of those areas, we have new projects. There are a lot of programmatic refundings of projects, and that's because they're successful and their appropriation, their accomplishments plans are doing quite well. About 25% are new fundings within that amount, so to your comments of earlier. Really, other than that, that's about the only comments I had at this point, sir.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions regarding the outdoor heritage portion? Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kahn?
I assume Mr. Johnson will be here for the whole bill to deal with amendments when they come up.
The request is that, you know, Mr. Johnson, you be around when we're doing amendments. Thank you. Representative Torkelson, do you want to talk about the Clean Water Council recommendations?
I sure do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Clean Water Fund portion of the bill has actually been reviewed quite extensively already. I will just hit a few highlights. Basically, the bill reflects the recommendations of the Clean Water Council, which are somewhat different than the governor's recommendations. I do not intend to go through those line by line, but the council has a budget outcomes committee that reviewed the expenditure proposals carefully and put a proposal together. The governor's proposal reflects the desires of the various agencies. The council cut those not dramatically, but based on cost of living increases, felt that there was room to bring those down slightly, and they then applied that money to more on the ground activities, especially those through Bowser. There is one significant change that I made regarding funding, and that is with the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. The governor's rec on that is $5 million. The council's recommendation is $2.5 million, and the bill currently carries $1 million in funding for that program. Mr. Chair, with that, I would stand for any questions regarding the Clean Water Fund portion of the bill.
Members, questions on this portion of the bill? Representative Murphy.
Representative Torkelson, is there any way that a group like the Big Marine Veterans Camp or the Wilderness Inquiry or Lake Superior Aquarium could apply to the Clean Water Fund for an appropriation for their goals?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not absolutely sure, Representative Murphy, which program they would fit into, but the council does not directly apportion funds in general to various groups. It's apportioned to the agencies that set up grant programs. I would have to do some inquiry to find out just which grant program those sorts of programs might be eligible for.
And you weren't, Mr.
Representative Murphy?
Representative Torkelson, you weren't in here when I started with the Outdoor Council. The recommendation for us to vote on today is that we approve some money for the Big Waters Veterans or Big Marine Veterans Camp and for the Wilderness Inquiry that came before us and made a request for funding and told us about their programs. And the Great Lakes Aquarium also did. And I was thinking that they were asking for funding from the Arts Fund, Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And I was thinking that, and when they were appeared before us, I didn't ask Great Lakes Aquarium that the question, but I did ask the Big Marine Veterans Camp and the Wilderness Inquiry Program if they had requested funds from the Outdoor Heritage Council or any of the others, and they said no. And so I'm thinking that, you know, originally we talked about what Representative Kahn talked about, is that programs could, various things could be funded from all four funds. But in our 5 years, that hasn't happened. And I can't see without a little prodding that it's going to happen. And I would like to see it happen because, especially the two littler funds, are so restricted in how much they can get. And I was thinking people are going out onto our lakes and streams and learning to kayak and fish and do all kinds of things. And I know you're more for restoration and cleaning up. But gosh, we should learn to share. And it's just a theory.
Representative Torkelson, did you learn to share?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Murphy, former Chair Murphy. I only went to kindergarten for one day, but in that one day, I was a guest of my cousin. I went to country school at the time, and we had no kindergarten in my country school house.
Well, that explains
where,
it.
Where we had five grades in one room. But both in that one day of kindergarten and in those 2 years where I spent with five grades in one room with one teacher, I did learn to share.
Good, good.
However, Chair Murphy, we know that that there is a great appetite for these funds in every single one of the four funds. There are requests that far exceed the funds available. To the best of our ability, we're trying to do the good work that we are instructed to do by the citizens of Minnesota when they pass the amendment, and we cannot fund everything all the time.
That's what Representative Murphy was saying earlier.
And let me just say also, to help folks understand a little bit how we approach this, if there were requests made to us at this stage that were made to the cultural heritage part of the bill, and other amounts that or requests that we did not fund, we will be sending letters to those who, for whatever reason, were not funded, and advise them as to where they should have gone with their request. There were requests made of us that were clearly perhaps a bonding request, or they were clearly should have gone to Outdoor Heritage or Clean Water, and we will advise as to where they should go in the future with those requests. And some, frankly, I'll mention the Wilderness Inquiry specifically. I mean, they made a request of us. We maybe could have sent them on to one of the others, but I knew that Outdoor Heritage and Clean Water Council pretty much had already made their recommendations. And so to send them on to those at that point would have been fruitless. They could not have been funded at all. And, you know, we did not have a lot of money available to fund them this time. But as you say, there is overlapping, and we could fit them into the category that we did and I think put in the $500,000. So that's just part of the thinking that's going on. Again, folks will get letters as to recommendations for future requests, and we'll continue to look at how they overlap. Any other questions for Representative Torkelson? Well then, Representative Torkelson, you've got off easy until perhaps we get to the amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an oral amendment to consider, and I'm wondering when you want to do that. It's just to fix a little error that was made in draft.
You know, I think we could do it right now while you're...
Okay, if members would turn to page 45 in the bill. There's some language on lines 45.31 through 45.35 that are just in the wrong section of the bill. They should be inserted on page 40 after line 4.20. And it's just a drafting error, Mr. Chair, and if you need further explanation, we could bring somebody in from the... audience. What, you want me to repeat
what
that,
were the lines
Mr.
again?
Chair, again, on page 45, lines 45.31 through 45.35 should be deleted from that section of the bill and added on page 40 after line 45.20.
So you are, Representative Perkelson is moving to delete from 45.31 to 45.35 through 45.35 and insert that after 45.20.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. You're a good listener.
Oh, 40.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't agree with me when I'm wrong.
It's happened before, Mr. Chair.
40.20. Representative Torkelson has moved that.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg.
So it looks like this would just move it from the DNR section to the Department of Agriculture section. Is that
yes?
Representative Torkelson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Freiberg, that's exactly what was supposed to have happened in the first place. It just got put in the wrong spot.
Further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Representative Torkelson, what about lines 20 to 30 on page 45? That was for infrared imaging and analysis. That's a change from the bill that you brought before us.
Yes,
Representative Torkelson
is a change to clarify. It's a request of the DNR to actually clarify language so they can use the money for what we believe it was intended for in the first place, and actually may help us if some sort of buffer initiative does move forward this year. It would help us with implementation of mapping for buffer work.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, from page 47, lines 11 to 14. That's different language than the original bill?
Representative Torkelson?
Again, Mr. Chair, we are, again, working with the potential for buffer work and the need for the ability to share funds and efforts across different units. If we need more detailed explanation on this, Mr. Chair, I'd have to phone a friend.
And Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, I have one more. Page 49. Lines 14 to 17.
Representative Torkelson?
Mr. Chair, I would have to phone a friend on this one because I do not have recollection of the need for change there. I believe Mr. Gerber suggested this change, and he is in the audience. And he would come down and testify if you would allow him, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Come on down. Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you. My name is Daryl Gerber, and I am with the Freshwater Society. And that recommendation stems from some findings that we had in a report we put out earlier this year called Farm to Stream. And the idea there is with the wellhead protection programs, we're kind of setting aside doing easements on land to take advantage of the opportunity for lands that are going to be leaving the Conservation Reserve Program just to get those where there's an opportunity. That they're going to be soon leaving that program, and kind of they were set aside and would soon be not set aside anymore, just kind of use that opportunity.
Okay. What was the, Mr.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Gerber, what was the name of the report? Farm to Street?
Farm to Stream.
Stream.
And actually, I can give you a copy, have the extra copy with me if you're interested.
I just didn't hear it well.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, maybe it's been asked and I wasn't certain, but what was the final outcome? I can't find it in the bill with the ag water quality certification that had the federal money. I think we kind of went back and forth a little bit at the last meeting, but I just hate to miss the opportunity of the bang on the buck, you know, if we put so much money in and we get so much back. Maybe you've got it, but I hope we're not missing it. Maybe I'm missing it by not seeing it.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is no change from the bill as it came from the last committee, and I mentioned this earlier on, that the governor's recommending $5 million, Clean Water Council is recommending $2.5 million, and this bill contains $1 million in funding. And if you want further information on this, I know the people from the Department of Ag are here, and if the chair wants them to come forward, we can take some time with it. I would say that it's still kind of in process. There's a proposed contract with NRCS, but that contract has yet to be finalized. And until I see that finalized language, Mr. Chair, I am reluctant to make any changes.
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, and as this bill moves forward, I'm guessing it might be a strong position of the governor to go with a bigger number. Is that would it be a House position to be against that, or would it be all right by you if we decided to go after more federal money, or is it something that you just think isn't that great of a program?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I stated earlier I'm not trying to kill the program. I do have some serious reservations about how it's being assembled and just exactly what the requirements are from the federal government and just what the long-term plan is for the program. Tried to estimate the potential costs if this program were to go statewide. One estimate, and it's just an estimate done in my office on my notepad, so it has no real validity, but estimated the total cost of the program to roll out statewide, reaching 75% of farmers. Total cost now, including both state and federal, would be north of $700 million.
And apparently a friend has joined you. Identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Matt Woolman. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And if I may, the question was asked regarding the federal regional conservation partnership grant of $9 million that was awarded to the state of Minnesota for the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. I do have, and I have given a copy of a letter from Acting State Conservationist Walter Albion regarding this funding, and you'll note in the last paragraph, he quotes, if non-federal contribution from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture that was described in the full proposal is not made available throughout the five-year life of the partnership agreement, this project would not be able to utilize the NRCS RCPP award. And so, Mr. Chair, at our last meeting, the question was asked whether we would lose this federal money if we were not able to come up with the $5 million in state match. And this confirms that assertion that I had made, that I believe that it would.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Willen. Representative Lilly, you have a follow-up?
Well, just at this point, I just wonder if, Mr. Chair, if Chair Torgelson has a comment based on what was just said. I just wanted to be clear. I didn't want to make it sound like that the Chair Torgelson was zeroing it out, but in defense of him. But it sounds like it's not enough. I just wonder if you had a comment, Chair Torgelson.
Representative Torgelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lilly. I have yet to see, even this paragraph is not definitive in dollar amounts as to what may be required. I would remind members that the federal money actually goes to the farmer participants in the program in the form of EQIP dollars, so they are really pass-through dollars to farmers. I'm not against that by any means, but I do have some serious questions about this program. It's cost approximately $88,000 per enrollee up to this point to sign them up. I realize that involves lots of startup costs, which are significant, but if this is going to be a statewide program available to all farmers, which it should be, if you're going to offer certainty to one farmer, you should at least have a plan in place where you will be able to offer it to all farmers. And with the numbers that have been generated and the costs that are involved, I don't know that we can afford to do that with the program in its current form. And that's my concern. And until I have those questions adequately answered, I believe the position in this bill is the one we should stick with for the time being.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to that final comment or your last statement there, today is the Boston Marathon, and I often think about it like runners, and none of us are Phyllis Kahn. She's done 50 of them, but I've done a few of them.
Boston Marathons?
No. 50 marathons. Oh. So I've done a few, but, as a runner, you don't start off and go off and run the marathon right away. You need to start running. So I guess I would argue with your thought process a little bit. It's better to start than to think about it and just maybe not do it. Not to start moving the needle. So I know in a perfect world we could do every farmer, and I know you probably know my district. I have so many farmers in my district, but not that many. But I realize that we're not going to be able to do them all, and I know you know that too, but I think it's still better to move the needle and get started on something if it's a viable and a good idea and a good project or good idea. So that's why I was kind of going with the argument. I hope that you'd be open to moving perhaps closer to I'm guessing the Senate or the governor's position. But that was mostly my question, and and I appreciate the dialogue. Well,
to continue with the race metaphors, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint we're doing here. You know, when I coached cross country, we had a 3-mile old timers race each year. Old timer meant anybody out of high school. And my team expected me to run. I had 3 goals each time. Finish, survive, and beat somebody. The closest it ever came was when I was running into the finish with this young pregnant girl. I told her, we'll go in together. And then I sprinted the last 10 yards.
Oh, you can't feel good.
Representative Kahn.
Well, I think the question hasn't really been answered yet, which I think was the one that Representative Lilly started asking. How much do we have to appropriate so that we don't lose any of the federal funds that we're entitled to if we make the proper appropriation? I'm not sure. Maybe I haven't listened properly, but that's the question I think he was asking, and that's the, or was he asking, is this or not, whatever way he was asking it, but that's the information that he really wants.
Is there an answer to that question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My understand, I have not seen a signed authorized document that actually states what that requirement is, and perhaps Mr. Wollman can answer that question more effectively than I can.
Mr. Wollman.
Mr. Chair, there is a full proposal that has been made to USDA that says we would, as a state, would offer a match of $2.5 million per year, and that would satisfy the requirements of this. If you read, it says, as described in the full proposal. And so, based on my read of the letter and the full proposal that the department had put together, we would need the governor's recommendation of $5 million to leverage this award.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Torkelson.
I still haven't seen that verified, and I would like to, but even if it is verified, there's no requirement that this fund, that all these monies come from the legacy fund. The department apparently has committed the state to $2.5 million a year for the next 4 years of spending, and I would question where they intended the legislature to come up with that automatically.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions on the water portion? Well, thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
I'm going to review the parks and trails. Total appropriation, $89,350,000. Department of Natural Resources, $26,391,000 the first year, $27,655,000 the second year. Met Council, $17,237,000 the first year and $18,067,000 the second year. The appropriation is allocated as follows: 40% to the DNR, 40% to Metro Parks, 20% to Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails. We have one policy bill included here, House File 36, a DIL provision, $512,000 of the money appropriated during the 2011 first special session for Parks and Trails, given to the St. Louis and Lake Counties Regional Railroad Authority for extension of the Mesaba Trail. The appropriations from fiscal year 2013 can be used until June 30th, 2017, just giving some leeway to them. No serious difficulties that I am aware of in this particular bill. It was a little bit different from last time I chaired, where we debated these percentages quite strenuously. And I think that things are all in the clear this year. But I'm sure I'll hear otherwise if that's not true. The Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, a total appropriation, $124,015,000. State Arts Board receiving first year $28,300,000, second year $29,040,000. I don't think I'll go through all of these amounts. You have the sheets. The Minnesota Historical Society, Department of Education, Department of Administration, the Minnesota Zoo, Minnesota Humanities Center, Perpich Center for the Arts, Indian Affairs Council, U of M Board of Regents, and Legislature receiving the funds there for the most part, the lion's share of them. There are a couple of differences from before. Under the Historical Society, we have a historical recognition fund. Under the Humanities Center, we have also a heritage fund, and there are some that did not receive funding that can be directed to make requests, grant requests out of these categories. And so if you're wondering about, some that have not been mentioned, they could be eligible under there. So you have the spreadsheets. You see basically where the money went. Again, more requests in terms of funding than we had money available. This is not an easy thing to put together, as you might imagine. And hopefully we've come close to what needs to be done. I do recognize as we go through the process that there will be some changes to these things. But we'll hopefully, when it's all over, come up with a bill that everyone will be just pleased as punch with. One policy amendment here, or a policy bill that was included by Representative Green. This bill prevents a previous legacy fund recipient, all four funds included, from receiving funds in the future if the legislative auditor finds that the recipient has failed to comply with the laws, rules, or regulations pertaining to appropriations received from legacy dollars. I think that was a good provision. Actually, verbally, we have said that, I think, probably all three of us over the years, that those who receive this funding should comply with the regulations and rules that are stipulated to receive the money. And this just puts it in writing. Any questions of me regarding Parks and Trails or the cultural heritage provisions? Well, that's good. Let's then proceed to testifiers, right? We will have testifiers. Outdoor Heritage, Clean Water. I guess we'll take them one at a time. Anyone wish to from the audience wish to testify on Outdoor Heritage? Mr. Botzik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We expect this to be particularly erudite because you are a graduate of the Princeton on the Prairie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can't spell erudite, so I'll be even briefer then. Mr. Chairman, I am Gary Botzik, Executive Director of Minnesota Conservation Federation, and I want to speak to two issues, I believe, and one for sure. Both relate, first one relates to the Lessard Sams appropriations to the policy language. There is new language in there where land acquired from Lessard Sams money starting July, I believe July 15th of this year, money would be set aside through the Board of State Board of Investment, one big account, and then each county would have an account that the Board of Investment would manage. In other words, the money from Lasard Sams would have to be appropriated or set aside, as well as the acquisition money itself. This is not a good idea, and Mr. Chairman, I tell you why. Because as someone just mentioned, I think Representative Murphy, we're in the sixth year of Lasard Sams. There's no guarantee that we will renew it. We hope people will vote for it again in 24 years. What happens if they don't? When you've made these commitments, these are PILT payments, payment in lieu of taxes. So what we're saying, the legislature in this policy, is that the state, through the Lasard Sams, will set aside money to pay local aides, local government, on a regular basis. And what happens if this Lasard Sams funding source is no longer there in 20 years? Well, there's a outstanding liability that stays there or remains with the state. So then it'd be up to the legislature. So you've committed future legislatures to continue this local aid. So you'd have a couple of choices: general fund, which is always difficult around here. Another one would be to dip into game and fish funds, which is where the PILT payments used to be paid from, and we worked hard to get that out of game and fish so that game and fish funds could be spent on moving the ball downfield as it relates to hunting and fishing, just like Lasard Sams. Now, if we decide that we're going to start paying taxes out of this fund, again, you're subtracting from the purpose that we think the voters voted for in 2008, was to get
projects on the ground. Mr. Bostic, of course, this is not in our bill.
I believe it is.
I think it's a tax bill, isn't it?
Both.
Mr. Johnson, will you
specify? I believe I read it, Mr. Chairman, online this morning.
Well, let's make sure here.
Yep, I still stand correct. Good speech, though, Mr. Chairman. I'll go down the hall and give it again. That's why I started with that one, Mr. Chairman. I thought I was pretty sure about that one. The other one, I'm not so sure.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman and members, to my information, there is an A-16 amendment, but it's not in the bill currently.
Mr. Johnson, yes, and the amendment doesn't... Let me find my amendment here. I have too many papers. Oh, here.
It's preemptive.
The amendment says that I'm surprised that someone who is so non-controversial as Representative Kahn would submit this.
Well, Mr.
Kennedy. The commissioner of MMB shall examine alternatives to payment in lieu of tax payments. I mean, it just says... and we have not approved it yet, but it just says that we can look at other possibilities and recommend them. I mean, it doesn't say that we have to do any of them. So basically what you're talking about, Mr. Bostic, is not in this bill, and all that is in being suggested is that we be open to looking at different ways to do this in the future.
Mr. Chairman, I stand corrected. It definitely is in the tax bill, so that's where I'll take my message.
And that was a very good speech.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good practice.
I think Representative Drazkowski will listen with just eagerness to hear this.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I testified against it in his division once already and failed miserably, so I'm on a strike two, and I got one more.
Well, do you have anything else you want to tell us that's actually in the bill?
Let me take a chance at that. As long as I'm here, I'm embarrassing myself. But Representative McNamara mentioned the LCCMR. Obviously, that's a separate bill that Representative Torkelson is carrying. Is there any language in this bill relating to LCCMR, specifically relating to the role of citizens? I believe, you know, Representative McNamara did mention it, and I'm sorry I don't have the bill in front of me because I just saw it online this morning and obviously didn't read it thoroughly enough. Can staff help me on that one?
Can staff help him on that one?
Here we go.
Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, members, the only thing I could think that he may be referring to is Section 3, which has been contained in the bill for quite some time. It'd be on page 20. This is similar to what was done in the LCCMR bill regarding the appointment of the executive director of the Lasard Council. So I don't know if that's the section you're referring to, but that may be.
That is indeed the section, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that, staff. That bill, that language is being placed on a number of bills as well, Mr. Chairman. And what that does is severely limits the role of citizens as it relates to the LCCMR. Obviously, their citizens are donating their time and treasure to be part of this process to make, to review and recommend to you folks for final improvement on those LCCMR projects. But they're also been involved in the selection process, the hiring and firing, if you will, of the executive director in the past. This similar problem is arising with other citizens' councils as well. But this is language that the conservation and environmental community are opposed to as well, Mr. Chairman. In any bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Botsy.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify in the Outdoor Heritage? Clean water.
No.
Dirty water. Okay. Then we will move to parks and trails. Everyone's getting up. Yes. Identify yourself again, please.
Mr. Chair, Matt Woolman with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. If you're still on the clean water section of the bill.
Well, no, but no. But we'll still take you.
Okay.
Mr. Woolman.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to introduce a couple of producers, certified producers, who are here today. If you'd be so inclined to hear from them, I believe they could be able to tell you more of a personalized experience that they've had with the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program.
Certainly.
First, I'd like to introduce Mr. Chair Rory Beyer. Rory operates an organic dairy farm with his parents in the Whitewater River watershed. They have a diverse crop rotation that includes corn, peas, forage sorghum, alfalfa, corn silage with cover crops. They also have a great dairy operation and sell their milk locally. Roy has participated in the Whitewater River Watershed Farmer-Led Council and sits on the local advisory committee for this program. Mr. Chair, Roy Beyer.
Mr. Beyer, identify yourself, please.
Thank you. My name is Rory Beyer. And I am a family farmer from Rolling Stone, Minnesota, and I am in the Whitewater River watershed. We farm 625 acres organic certified corn, alfalfa, barley, oats, sorghum, soybeans, and milk, 125 dairy cows, and run a small grass-fed beef operation. We rotationally graze our cattle, and we rotate our crops with fall cover crops planted for winter soil conservation. I serve on the Whitewater River Watershed Project Farmer-Led Council as well as the local advisory committee for this program. I'm a member of the GLCA, Grazing Lands Conservation Association, and a farmer-owner member of Crop Cooperative in Organic Valley. I was interested in participating in this program because I feel that water quality and control of soil erosion are the most important things I can do as a farmer and a citizen. I believe that it is every citizen's right to have their food produced with clean water and healthy soil. If I do not take care of the water and soil, how can we expect to pass the farm down for generations to come? It is important to me to leave a legacy of conservation for my children and grandchildren. This program allowed us to be recognized for the conservation practices we have already implemented and in the addition of better rotations to our organic farm plan. This is a process of learning and adapting to best practices of farming to strengthen the Minnesota economy and the quality of the water and soil for the habitat and health of our communities. It is great working with the Winona County SWCD staff, the most proactive in the state, in my humble opinion, on the assessment part of this program. Mark showed me how the program worked and gave me the reassurance that farmers would continue to be in compliance with new regulation for the next period of the next 10 years. To some farmers, this will be more important, specifically because they will need more time to comply with regulation as regulations begin to stiffen. Through egg certainty, should we need time to improve our efforts further, it is an insurance policy for us that guarantees we have the time to make all necessary additions or changes and remain in compliance. I personally feel that this is what most farmers need and what motivates them to become water quality certified, and that is time. The agriculture industry continues to face scrutiny about environmental performance. I feel this program is the beginning of the solution to the issues of water quality and erosion control. And finally, by addressing these issues in a time frame setting and working with farmers to eliminate environmental concerns, our legacy will be preserved. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Beyer. Any questions of our testifier? Thank you. Mr. Woolman, you've got...
Mr. Chair, if I might, we have one more farmer who is certified, a little bit different in a different watershed, different kind of operation. That's the beauty of this program, is that it doesn't matter if you're an organic or conventional, large or small, you can participate. Chuck Uphoff is here. Chuck is the first certified farmer in the Middle Sauk River pilot area. Chuck and his wife, Deb, have a diversified dairy operation, and his son has also begun raising Scottish Highlanders. Chuck has been a leader in conservation in the Stearns County area, serving on the SWCD board for 14 years, as well as participating on the advisory committee, the local advisory committee for the Middle Sauk pilot area for this program. Mr. Chair, Chuck Uphoff.
Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Yes, I am Chuck Uphoff. My wife...
Will you spell your last? Spell your last name.
U-P-H-O-F-F.
Uphoff.
Uphoff, Uphoff.
Whatever. Continue, please.
It's very German.
Well, that's your problem.
Oh, excuse me. No, my wife and I, my wife Deb and my son Ross, do run this 500-acre farm in central Stearns County, and we are definitely part of the Middle Sauk pilot area. We grow about 50 acres of corn and another 50 acres of small grain, and we rotate alfalfa into our operation. As of 1 year ago, we did sell our dairy livestock. Otherwise, I was a dairy farmer my whole life, and along with my predecessor here, we are starting to grow grass-fed beef, and that is part of my son's operation.
When did you stop dairy?
We stopped, actually sold our dairy cows in May of last year. So, and as
where were you shipping your milk?
We were shipping our milk to Land O'Lakes, our Melrose Dairy Protein at that time. Actually, our farm is from the central Minnesota, of course, Stearns County, New Munich area is where I...
So you know Representative Heidkirchen?
I know Representative Heidkirchen very well, thank you.
Greet him for me.
I certainly will. I probably see him about once a month. So, anyway.
Continue, please.
Yes, thank you.
Digression.
Thank you. Anyway, I also am chair of the Stearns County Soil and Water Conservation District Board of Supervisors. I've been probably chair for eight years. I've been on the board for about 14 years. I've always been very conservation-minded. I think I got a lot of that from my father, who at that time, you know, which was many years ago, we took over the farm in 1980. He actually went out and was putting rye in coarse textured soils, and he was grazing livestock on that rye in fall and spring, and I kind of watched that growing up, and he put a lot of grass waterways in. Well, when we took over the dairy operation, we kind of threw the moldboard plow aside and we started chisel plowing. That's, you know, kind of the background kind of our farming operation. And then I started to contour when I chiseled, and I put the moldboard plow in the shed, and I've never seen it since, so I haven't seen a moldboard plow on our farm for 35 years. And we continued with the grass waterways and such on the farm. And I'm also involved in the buffer program for the Sauk River Watershed District. We're trying to establish some buffers in the area. Got a grant from Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to assist with that. And I see Representative Murphy is back here, and I am also president of a local organization called Midwest Outdoors Unlimited. And what we do is we take individuals with disabilities, individuals with terminal cancer, our people that are confined to their homes, our nursing homes, our assisted living. We take them out hunting and fishing. And I am going to be holding a turkey hunt on our farm here in just a couple of weeks, and we are taking three disabled people out there and for an opportunity to go hunt and fish, or hunt at that time. And we also take them deer hunting. And like I said, we also have local fishing events, work with DAV and so on. So just a little plug on what you were talking about before. Some of the things that we do on the farm, of course, we have CRP on the farm. We've planted a lot of trees. We put in a manure storage structure back in 1994. We also are CSP Tier 3 participants, which our contract has just wore off. I also created a 12-acre wetland with the help of the Sauk River Watershed District and also with the help of Stearns County Board of Commissioners, who helped finance the berm if I would contribute the land. So that ended up being a wonderful tool, and all the wildlife and stuff that we're seeing there. I think one thing we're seeing this spring, and what conservation means on the ground, is wind erosion. We've seen so much wind erosion this spring. And we have incorporated cover crops on our farm, along with my predecessor, who talks about grass-fed beef and so on too. But with the incorporation of cover crops, we have pretty much eliminated any kind of soil erosion of any kind on our farm, and that has been a wonderful tool. And we used a little bit of Equip Monday through that, and I kind of incorporated that with Certainty. As we went through the Stearns County Soil and Water Conservation District, they helped us manage and and perform the tool for Certainty. And then I decided to get some Equip funding for the cover crops, and it really worked out great. I tried aerial application. This year I think I'm going to try Vicon Cedar into corn row crops and so on. So and it was just great working with the Soil and Water Conservation District. I mean, Mark LeFay, who is kind of handling the tool, did a wonderful job and a wonderful person to work with. The only thing we really had to do on the farm in order to enter Certainty, I had to fix up a couple tile inlets, and like I talked about, then we incorporated the cover crops to enroll. Participating in the program, it's not only the 10-year exemption that we had talked about before. I think that's wonderful, because if you're into the program a year or 2 years, it gives you, if a new rule comes up, it gives you that 7 or 8 year chance to develop your farm and get into whatever regulation is going to be coming. The other thing is, I think talking about the grass-fed beef is an opportunity to show the consumer that we do really care about what we grow and what we do on the farm and what we do for the environment. So, and we also have a local business in the area called Golden Plump, and they are piloting a program called Field Stewards, and they are giving a $5 incentive for any participant in our Middle Sauk for their acres of corn and soybeans that they put in. So every steward that makes this makes Certainty a part of their farm will get a $5 incentive per acre, which is a very nice compliment, because they want to make sure that their just bare product of chicken is bought for the their product, their beans and corn, are bought from certified farmers. They would love to see that head in that direction. Also, Third Street Brewery out of Cold Spring is giving everybody who becomes a member of Certainty, they give them a six-pack of Rise to the Top. And I got to admit, I'm sorry, I drank it all. Otherwise, I would give you guys some or give you a sample. But it has been great to work cooperatively with the local businesses and the programs. And, you know, water quality is huge, and stewardship is huge. And you know, my farm is in our fifth generation. I'm in the fourth. My son is going to take over. Our ancestors came over from Germany in 1888, and we definitely want to make the soil better, the land better, than what it was when we took over. I thank you all very much, if you have any questions. So,
thank you, Mr. Say your name again.
Uphoff.
I can do that one. Thank you, Mr. Uphoff and Mr. Breyer. You know, we talk a lot about conservation and environmentalism. It's good to have people testify before us who are actually doing it in a larger scale. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. And now, parks. Welcome. I don't know what order you want to speak, but identify yourselves and away you go.
Good afternoon, Chairman Erdahl. My name is Erica Rivers. I'm the Director of Minnesota State Parks and Trails, and I'll allow my colleagues to introduce themselves as well.
And good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Arnie Steffrud. I'm the Planning Analyst in the Regional Parks and Natural Resources Program at the Metropolitan Council.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Thomas Ryan. I'm representing Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, and I'm a park superintendent from Olmsted County.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. We are here this afternoon sitting together as the three implementing partners of the Parks and Trails Legacy Funds. As we have been in the over the course of the last 2 years, sitting at tables together all around the state of Minnesota, we're working closely together to coordinate our work and ensure that the state has a seamless system of high-quality parks and trails and recreation opportunities throughout the states. As the direction of this body and the other body in the state legislature, each of us has established a system plan to ensure that we're dedicating our investments in a balanced, thoughtful approach. Each implementing partner seated here today has submitted plans to this committee and others recommending the highest priority projects for our respective systems. This here is the Minnesota State Parks and Trails System, on the back page of which is all of our legacy projects proposed for the biennium. All of our plans have been guided by a 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan, and each of our system plans were used to guide the decision-making for where to invest these dollars and get the best return on that investment in fiscal 16 and 17 for the citizens of Minnesota. We are all here today sitting together to collectively support the 40-40-20 allocation of these funds and the recommendations in our respective system plans. We're also here today to really support the recommendations in the Clean Legacy Bill that you put forth today. In particular,
by
we would like
clean,
to...
Clean, Ms. Rivers, what do you mean?
By clean, I mean that there are not line appropriations for every single project within the Legacy Bill. In particular, we want to support...
So you're not looking for a lot of amendments?
Correct. Okay, that's correct.
Just making sure.
Okay. And in particular, we want to support lines 67.25 through 67.32, which is coordinating with partners project money that you guys have you have all established here that will help us create this seamless system. We believe that working together, these three entities can continue the work of coordinating with partners that we have begun and creating that seamless system, and we will be able to best use those funds to coordinate future information needs between all three of our systems. In particular, we're excited about a web-based project that we are working on with MINIT, which is the Minnesota Information Technology, to create a seamless web-based information exchange system that will be used by all of the can be used by all the general public to find and locate different recreational opportunities throughout the state of Minnesota, irrespective of which system those specific entities sit within. So again, I thank you for your time today, and I'll turn this over to my colleagues.
Thank you, Mr.
Steffrud.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The Metro Council's portion of the bill is on line 68.10 to 69.5. As you did in your introduction, there is $17,237,000 the first year, and $18,067,000 for the second year of the biennium for projects in the Metropolitan Regional Park System. We, too, have submitted a report to you. The first one was submitted on January 15th that describes all the projects to be financed with these appropriations as required in the 2013 session law. And then last week I delivered this updated report because it reflects an additional $402,000 for the biennium from the February 27th or 28th forecast. So we too have been using the 25-year legacy plan to guide our decisions on this. And in addition to the Park and Trail Legacy Fund appropriation, it's not supposed to supplant traditional funding sources. And in this case, it's supplementing $11.8 million of federal transportation grants for trail construction projects, and $8.2 million of Metro Council park bonds for buying land, as well as the park agency's funds in the cases of some development projects. So I'd be happy to answer any questions at the appropriate time.
Thank you. Mr. Ryan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like our colleagues, we'd like to acknowledge and extend our gratitude to you all for the 40-40-20 split. This money will help Greater Minnesota Regional Parks develop as that third leg of the statewide parks and trails system. We're very grateful. We have been working hard on the system plan and designating regional parks and trails. The funding for the commission will allow us to continue that work, and again, we're grateful. We will be doing another round of applications and evaluations in June to continue the process of designating regional parks and trails. Leading up to that, in May, we'll be providing six workshops, one in each of the distinct districts of Greater Minnesota related to parks and trails, to help park and trail managers understand the designation and application process. This summer, we will open the grant application process for the 2016 grants, and like our colleagues, you also received a report from us. It's one with the spectacular photos of Greater Minnesota. I'm sure you all recall that. We'd also like to thank you for the appropriation for coordination among partners, because as my colleagues have said, and we have been warm colleagues over the years, we really feel very strongly that we need to work in collaboration and partnership for the greater good of all of our citizens related to parks and trails. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from members? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for working on the development of your plans and the 40-40-20. Do you anticipate having any of the 40-40-20 go to how to use the parks, or some of the things I was saying earlier, teaching people how to get the best use out of the parks, or what they do on trails, and reaching out to people that are going to be your users? Is there going to be any grants for things like a camp, or various camps, or like the Wilderness Inquiry Program?
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, thank you for your question.
Ms. Rivers.
Certainly within the 40% that is dedicated to the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, 15% of the DNR allocation is spent on the pillar within the legacy fund that's connecting people to the outdoors. And with that money, we have a hugely popular program over the last 5 years. I think you're aware of it. It's called the I Can Series, which teaches kids and families how to hike, camp, bike, mountain climb, paddle, and the like. Also want to point again to the collaborating with partners funding that is on line 67.25 through 67.32. That coordinating with partners is used, as I was mentioning, to talk about the web-based integrated information system, which will allow users to log on to a website and actually choose a park or trail based on the county that they're recreating in. And that's really great work because most people don't care if they're they're really recreating within a regional park or a state park or even a county park. So we really feel like this is going to be a great advancement. We've begun work on that system over the course of this last biennium with Minute, and we intend to continue that really great work moving forward into the next biennium. So we will hopefully be coming to you in 2 years with a product that we can show you, which is really exciting. Also part of that, coordinating with partners, is money that we use to work with our Legacy Advisory Committee, which is a committee that we have jointly appointed. We have three representatives from each of our implementing agencies, as well as ad hoc members throughout the state that are appointed as well. And we use this group of people to really hold us accountable to that 25-year legacy plan. We bounce ideas off them. They make recommendations to the three implementing agencies about how we should spend that money into the future. And I would certainly hope that Wilderness Inquiry, in fact, I have invited Mr. Dayton and others to come to the Legacy Advisory Committee to talk to them about the really exciting work that's being done by Wilderness Inquiry, as well as other, you know, it's their open meetings that where we can advance really exciting, great ideas like this one. As far as the grant program goes, at this time we don't have specific grant programs for something like that, but we believe that the best way to encourage innovative new ideas that way is through that Legacy Advisory Committee.
And Representative Murphy?
And Madam Chair, Ms. Rivers, can you see at some future time using some of the Parks and Trails funding for those kind of activities?
Mr. Chair. Rivers. Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, yes, I can see that we would like to use money to coordinate amongst the different agencies so that we can share best practices across all three of the implementing agencies into the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I like one of the last things you mentioned there, the ICANN program has just really been really impressive, and that's a great program. And then recently on a tour we had at the Minnesota Zoo, I noticed they had a camping computer kiosk kind of a thing, and I'm just curious if you're doing more of those, because I understand they're hugely popular and well utilized, and it just kind of seems like something that would fit into marketing and legacy and so just kind of want a quick comment on that, if that's possible, and then I have other.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Rivers?
Representative Lilly, yes, in fact, those kiosks have been funded by DNR through legacy funds, and we intend to continue them.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad to see that, because they're, and then there was good, I was glad to see also on them you had like legacy things stating with some legacy funds. And I get around the state and kind of go into a lot of different areas. It seems like in the Lasard Sams area that they've done a pretty good job on some of the lands that we've acquired of putting signs up, but it just seems like in some of the projects that we do on trails that I get onto and other stuff, I just don't see like the logo as much as I would think I would if you know, maybe it's I'm not seeing the right exact spot, or, you know, but it seems like on a trailhead or something where you've received legacy funding. So I challenge everybody here at the table, plus all of you in this room, if you're getting legacy funds, I think it's, as we go forward, to tell our story and you know, especially if, you know, we're only 5 years in, but, if, you know, if we ultimately come to renewal, people know where this money's gone. So I just challenge you with the signs. And then I'm just curious, so who, if you could name maybe the three of you, because I'm quite a trail user, and if you could name, like, each of you three, you know, so like in your 20%, your 40, and your 40, or whatever. So what are three big things? So we come out of this bill, and we go home, and we're talking about this bill. What do we tell our folks that you've done with your 20%, your 40, and your 40? What are three big things, you know, that I can say as a story?
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Rivers.
Just a point
simple
of clarification,
mark.
Something that we've already done or something we're looking forward to in the next biennium?
In this bill right here.
In this bill.
I know you, Mr. Chair, so I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, and yeah, so going forward, I know you're, I know it's the county kind of, the metro, and theirs lists quite a few projects, but you were happy that yours wasn't, but I imagine there's big things in there, so I don't know if one of them's doing Representative Heitzman's money up there. If that's one of them, I'm happy to hear that. So anyways, go ahead, you.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Rivers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We are excited about everything that is in our 25-year or our two-year legacy report, which, again, I would just highlight we submitted to you in back in January. And on that last page, we do have a complete list of all the projects we're proposing to do. And, in fact, Mr. Heintzman or Representative Heintzman's project is in there at $300,000 each year for the biennium. It's a really exciting opportunity to create additional mountain bike trails of what is becoming one of the nation's premier mountain bike destinations within the state of Minnesota. So we're very excited about that investment. We're also very excited about the Whitewater Campground investment. This will be a really large investment in a near-metro state park. Many of you recall in the last biennium there was a significant flood down in that area. We're going to relocate that campground and create a next-generation campground down at Whitewater, which we're very excited about. We're also excited to continue the 15% investment we make in connecting people with the outdoors, with new and innovative ways to connect people to the outdoors and overcome the barriers that keep some people recreating outdoors. So I would say those are my top three.
Thank you.
Mr. Steffer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Lilly. Our top three would be a land acquisition. We are required in state statute to spend at least 10% of the legacy funds to buy land. So the $3.53 million in this appropriation would be leveraging or supplementing $4.3 million of non-state funds to buy land for parks and trails. The second big item, creating new opportunities. And we're spending $16.14 million over the next 2 years to build new park facilities and 13.4 miles of new regional trails. That's leveraging $11.8 million of federal grants and $1.65 million of non-state funds. And then the third primary use is to take care of what we have. We're spending $13.17 million out of this appropriation to replace worn-out park and trail facilities and an additional $1,049,000 for restoration and management of natural resource lands within these parks and trails. And that's supplementing about $2.1 million of non-state funds. So that's our big three.
Mr. Ryan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly. Well, as you know, we've been plowing the road developing a new provider for the last 18 months. So the first thing we're probably the most proud of is that we're discreet when we pump our fists about that 20%. We're tickled to be here. But given that, we also have to prove that we belong. And that's an onerous task, and it's one that the Commission takes very seriously on behalf of Upstate Minnesota. If I was to render my opinions about that, apart from my colleagues, I guess I would suggest, first of all, the designation of what's a regional park and trail is a very important component, and it's one that our colleagues really wanted us to make sure that we had an understanding of when we reached the agreement of 40-40-20. The second one, or the third, depending on how you look at it, would really be the importance of beginning to build a system.
Yes.
And that's an important component for us because we promised that deliverable to you several years ago when we began. And certainly with our plan and with the understanding that it's a fluid plan and not static and adaptable and adjustable, I would say that those are probably the big three, Mr. Chair. And if I may, just to follow up with Representative Murphy's question, Greater Minnesota is just now beginning to see where we can begin to become the agency that you expect us to become. And in conjunction with that, Representative Murphy, we are also having discussions about how we can further connect people to the outdoors, including the complementary notion of following the lead with our other agencies on some of the good things they've done, train-to-trainer type programs for Greater Minnesota regarding environmental education and things like that. And I don't think it's too bold for me to say that you'll be able to see some progress in that in the coming months as far as an outline for what we want to do there.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for going through each of that. And I know there's more. You could keep talking in the projects, but you know, it is one of the smallest funds of the whole thing, but believe me, it's important work that you're doing, and people really care about those numbers. And during the Easter break, I worked for an airline, but I didn't have an opportunity to take a vacation, so I had my daughter drive me to South Dakota, and I rode a bike across Minnesota in one day. So I went from South Dakota to Stillwater, and it's about 200 miles, and went through Representative Erdahl's district, Miller's district. But I can tell you there's some real safety problems. You know, I was on a road bike, so I didn't get on your loose line because it's a gravel. But you know,
they're changing that though.
Those folks, in Greater Minnesota, they need a place to go. They cannot do it on these roads. They're very dangerous. Cars are moving. Farm equipment's moving. You know, a lot of moving pieces, and it's quite dangerous. And you would never bring your kids and have them on the side of a lot of these roads. And, people were nice and respectful, but it's dangerous, especially on a windy day. It was crazy. But these trails are really important, plus the marketing, the connectivity. Then, you know, we all know about Lanesboro and all the success there, and now what's going on in Brainerd, the huge success there. But there's going to be more opportunities all over the state, so keep thinking of those. And these monies, it's a small pot, but you can do some true magic with it, so thank you.
Anything else? Well, I'd like to thank all three of you. I want to commend you for the work you've been doing.
Thank you.
For those who think that people involved with government can't work together and find a common ground, I think this is a good example. Ms. Rivers, you wanted to say something?
Mr. Chair, if I may, on the A18 amendment, just in the interest of time, since the three implementing agencies are in agreement on this issue, I just would like to offer up for the record that we do not support the A18 amendment. We do believe that the A18 amendment, we have language in with coordinating with partners that will allow for a competitive process to conduct the work that's being proposed in that amendment. We just wanted to all three be on the record not supporting that amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else on parks and trails?
Thank you. My name is Laura Hedlund, and I'm active in a lot of environmental groups, including Minnesota 350, Wilderness in the Cities. I was also a signer of the Declaration of the Rights of Water from the Women's Congress of Future First. I have a show called Food Freedom Radio. And I am. Here's some facts. I got this book, The Sixth Extinction, if anyone wants any light reading. The BBC reports that 75% of all mammal species will be extinct in around 300 years. The Environmental Working Group found 232 toxic chemicals in the umbilical cords of newborn babies. Minnesota waters, our groundwaters, our rivers, our lakes and streams are suffering from human activity. What is our legacy? Voters in Minnesota created the Legacy Fund because we care. Human ecological impacts are the result of our dominant thinking patterns. A growing number of people are working to shift from Cartesian, Newtonian, extractive systems thinking to regenerative and restorative actions. And one simple question makes visible our intent. How does this action affect the next seven generations? Minnesota voters, they voted for the legacy amendment with a shared intention to be responsible toward the future. As I read House File 303, I am deeply grateful for the willingness of Minnesotans. As I read House File 303, I am moved by the work of so many people and so many organizations. This is important work which will yield generational benefits. Protecting open spaces and improving water quality are fundamental. Connecting people to the outdoor and providing art programming today also benefits the future. In House File 303, several counties are requesting legacy funds to pay for development. The main reason Minnesotans supported the legacy amendment was to preserve natural resources, not to pay for additional development and infrastructure, just as bridges, and we call them trails, but really they're non-motorized roads. They're non-motorized roads. Legacy funds are very clear. They're not to be used to substitute for traditional sources. Legacy funds are meant to be our legacy. Spending legacy dollars on large engineering products at best offers only first generational benefits. Future taxpayers will be saddled with expensive maintenance and replacement costs for these non-motorized asphalt trails. At the same time, and this is where I'm coming from because we don't really understand this, but at the same time that we're spending our legacy dollars, we are sacrificing the ecological integrity of our metropolitan area. So constructing roads in our few last remaining natural spaces in the metro area stands in stark contrast to the intent of Minnesota voters. We are just beginning to understand, just beginning to grasp the relationship, the complex relationships between soils and ecosystems. So to understand generational thinking, let's go back seven generations to Spring Lake Park near Hastings. Spring Lake's cool, spring-fed waters were once separated from the Mississippi River by a narrow strip of land. The wetlands supported abundant wild rice and fish, majestic bluffs, considered sacred and alive by generations of humans, share it, the Spring Lake Park. The lock and dam project in the 1930s resulted in loss of hundreds of historic and prehistoric sites along the river. Fish populations were hurt, silt accumulated, backwater pools became stagnant, and these levees have increased sediment. In short, the sins of our fathers leaves us with the Mississippi River, which is facing critical issues. Legacy funds are intended to be restorative. In 2015, Dakota County clear-cut a huge part of Spring Lake Park Reserve using more than $1 million of legacy funds. Soon, these legacy dollars are going to be used to mine ancient bluffs, and a private company will be making money from some raw material. It's hard to fathom legacy dollars being used to cause historic ecological damage. My name is on the Spring Lake Master Plan. The plan authorized a seven mile accessible trail at the edge of the park at a cost of less than $1 million. But without a new master planning project, the project route in scope and measured in dollars, it's at least tenfold. Two bridges were added. And while biking and walking are long fractured limestone cliffs, I mean, that's a really cool experience, right? But most people would reject mining a bluff to create that experience. The Mississippi River Regional Trail crashes through the preserve zone, despite the fact that the plan specifically required only 4 to 6 feet of natural soil trails in that area. The plan states, and I'm quoting, "Habitat fragmentation not only reduces quantity of food and cover for wildlife, but means less variety and lower quality of food." Dakota County used legacy dollars to fragment a living forest home to a remarkable 232 different bird species. The Minnesota DNR recommended avoidance of any dry bedrock bluff prairie because our human legacy has eliminated 99% of this living native plant community. Dry bedrock bluff is on the verge of expiration in Minnesota. Minnesota voters expect legacy funding to be used to preserve these areas. Instead, they're about to begin a mining project which will remove 70,000 cubic yards of rock from this ecologically sensitive and culturally important public space. There are numerous ways to fund infrastructure improvements. The voters did not intend legacy funds to be used to build concrete bridges. The non-motorized road projects do not fit into the intent of the Minnesota voters. The human spirit needs places where nature has not been rearranged by the hands of man. Legacy dollars focused on repairing human damage are aligned with our generational obligation. Open eyes see plenty of concrete and asphalt. We do not make the land. With humility and reverence, we experience the living world. And I am, let's find innovative ways to get kids in urban spaces, in rural spaces. I think most of you might know that there's an 8-year lifespan that we have going on right now. We need to learn how to get urban kids in rural spaces. And I do have a handout. The handout includes, this is a photo from Spring Lake Park. And you can't see it the best, but there's one person here, and then you'll look up here, you'll see another person. So up to 200 feet were cleared. And a lot of this comes down to the federal requirements. So we think it's really great to get all this federal money, and I love federal. I mean, I think we've got good things. So I'll pass those out, and I thank you for your time. I also look for innovative stuff like Wilderness Inquiry and getting people out in other ways. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hedlund. Anyone else wish to talk about parks and trails?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Identify yourself, please.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Erdahl, members of the committee. Excuse me, my name is Catherine Zimmer, and I'm the executive director of a nonprofit called Women Observing Wildlife Minnesota. And I'd like to follow up on Ms. Hedlund's comments with respect to the appropriation of our legacy dollars for parks and trails. And I'd like to primarily refer to the Parks and Trails Legacy Plan that was put together at the direction of the legislature in 2011. With that plan, they did ask over 1,500 citizens what they wanted that money spent for. And the majority of citizens said that they wanted the money spent on protecting natural resources and creating a next generation of stewards. With that plan, then we laid out four strategic pillars of connecting people, acquiring land and creating opportunities, taking care of what we have, including regular reinvestment in natural resource management and infrastructure, and coordinating among partners. The plan also lays out that we should have a balanced approach and that we should have fairness and equity in the plan and discourage duplicative spending. However, in House File 303 today, and I'm referring primarily to the Met Council's portion of the appropriation, when you look at the percent of money spent on the different pillars, you will see that actually only 3% of the money is being spent towards connecting people to the outdoors. 49% of our dollars is being spent on new infrastructure. 49%. Only 6% is being spent on natural resource restoration, and 31% is being spent on infrastructure restoration, which also often includes expansion and new infrastructure. So the point that I'd like to make here is that the appropriations and the money that is being spent on the part of the Met Council's appropriation of our legacy dollars is not balanced, and it is not in keeping with what the citizens said, both through the planning process and through what we voted for in that legacy dollars. And I would ask that this committee, and myself and many other citizens, as a matter of fact, look towards creating stiffer guidelines for how our legacy dollars should be spent, even going so far as laying out percentages, because obviously entitling agencies, so to speak, are not able to do that in a balanced and non-duplicative manner. Thank you very much. Do you have any questions?
Any questions?
Okay.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to testify? We're going to go ahead and move on then to arts and cultural heritage. Anyone that would like to testify? There we go. If you could please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Tamman from Sudan, Minnesota. And when this hearing started, I certainly didn't think I'd have any great expertise in the arts, but it was an interesting discussion hearing the questions about Big Marine Veterans Camp, and I happen to think I've got 50 years' experience being a veteran. And it was in 1965 that I served on the ground in Vietnam, and as I look at this issue, my wife and I have been to Big Marine Veterans Camp, very nice camp. But as I look at the situation in the world today, I certainly believe that veterans should be pampered a little bit, but I think they should be pampered with federal dollars out of the military budget, not with sales tax dollars out of Minnesota. We have made some great expenditures out of our legacy funds, and I immediately think of the Great Northern Radio Show up there in the Arrowhead Country. Every couple of months we have something a little bit like a Prairie Home Companion, only with a little more frostbite. And so I would certainly rather see those dollars heading towards northern Minnesota and let the feds pick up the Big Marine campground. And just for your information, the Great Northern Radio Show will be having a presentation in Grand Marais the second week in June, so I would encourage you to send some of this arts funding up there and to come yourselves and bring some dollars with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kimmon. Would anybody else like to testify? Go ahead, come on up.
Thank you.
And please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Mark Hughes, and I'm a former board member of the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities. I had served my 12 years, which is by state statute, all of you can serve on the committee. It's one of the best committees I've probably ever served on. But that's not why I'm here today. We are working collaboratively on a project with the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities. We are trying to secure some funding for ADA compliance and so on and so forth. I have a show called Disability Viewpoints that is 16 and a half years old. It will be 17 October 1st, we hope, and won some 7 national awards. And this is my first time by myself. I've been in front of the Legacy Committee. The other time before, I believe I was testifying for some stuff on TPT for MNO or something like that. But what's in the numbers is that we are requesting about $34,000, that being for audio and video transcription and ADA compliancy ourselves. And so when you're talking about some of the other numbers, that's just a drop in the bucket. And we hope to continue this production over at CTV, where we do it. Disability Viewpoints, and I said this very humbly, is one of the bigger staffing productions that we have. And what's happening really is that CTV has had the good fortune for many years of having $1.4 million in budgetary funds. However, with the cutback on Comcast and the merger talks coming up this week with Time Warner, they've been cut back about 80%. So you can imagine what that does to we folks at Disability Viewpoints. So I'm not here for entitlement. I'm asking for your help, please, so that the Minnesota State Council and I can go on and serve the state, the great people in the state of Minnesota, in a collaborative effort. Thank you.
Thank you. We are, by the way, on cultural heritage at this point. Somehow we... No, you're okay. We haven't exactly followed our list anymore, but that's all right. So, identify yourself, welcome, and give us your presentation, please.
Good afternoon. I'm Leslie Davis, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak. And I want to especially comment about your legislative assistant, Ms. Patton, being extremely cooperative and helpful over the last couple of months in me trying to get this issue before you. What you see in the attachment that I've given out is a letter that I sent to you, Chairman Erdahl, on February 15th, expressing my concern about the money being allocated to Minnesota Public Radio and to Twin Cities Public Television. And I have the evidence in the attachments here to provide to you that these are cheating corporations that have lied to the people of Minnesota, and tell you how they did that. Because I ran for governor, and unbeknownst to probably a lot of people, and when I announced my candidacy in January of 2014 to run against Governor Dayton in the DFL primary, it was immediately picked up by the Echo Press in Alexandria and the Northland News and Bill Salisbury, the Pioneer Press. And as soon as they reported that, it wasn't a couple of days, then the blackout hit. The blackout by all the media in Minnesota, if you're a private company, you can choose who to report to or who to report about. But you can't if you claim yourself as a tax-exempt corporation that uses public money like Minnesota Public Radio does, and with an $88 million budget, and brags about how open they are and journalistic integrity. What they did is they committed a crime, and the crime was conspiracy. Two people conspiring to harm another person, which is me, is a crime. It's a crime that I've submitted to the U.S. Attorney. The FBI has it. They won't answer what level of investigation they're doing. County Attorney Freeman has it, Choi, and several others. So the attachments that I gave you show my communication with them. Mr. Edgerly, he received my news releases, and the first one was in January 18th. Why did they report anything? For 7 months, Minnesota Public Radio, supposed to be the bulwark of democracy and openness, didn't mention my name at all. Not even when I registered my candidacy with the Secretary of State, and I and my running mate, Gregory Soderbergh, former Marine, Purple Heart, combat veteran, marketing sales expert, money expert, conservationist, and property owner from Austin, not one word throughout the state of Minnesota from anyone. In addition to email, fax, news releases put out by the Minnesota News Association that I paid $128 for throughout the state, why the blackout? Why wouldn't they report? They report everybody that's running. Just imagine running in your district or your area, and the newspaper doesn't even mention your name that you're running, and nobody knows about it. Well, why wouldn't they do that? Well, they done, according to some of the media people that have told me, they did it to protect Governor Dayton. They didn't want me to debate issues with Governor Dayton regarding soda machines in schools that feed fructose soda to children for money to support the schools. They didn't want to debate the plan I had to finance roads and bridges without debt or taxes. They didn't want to debate fluoride in the public water supplies. Well, how could you do so? How could you figure out how to get everybody not to report? When we registered at the Secretary of State's office, we immediately went over to the Centennial Office Building where the media was meeting, presented the information to Patrick Condon of the Star Tribune, other people in the office at the time. Not one word reported that candidates registered. Well, how come? I wrote to Glenn Taylor after he took over the Star Tribune, and Glenn Taylor, after having paid $100 million for the Star Tribune, sent me back a letter that he forwarded my concern onto the leadership at the Star Tribune. I said, you're the leadership of the Star Tribune. That's what you paid $100 million for. So why wouldn't the Star Tribune report one word or acknowledge the fact that I'm a registered candidate? They've known me for 30 years as the founder and president of the Earth Protector Environmental Group. I've made friends and some not such good friends throughout the state of Minnesota in environmental battles. So I'm here to tell you today that giving money to these two crooked corporations would probably be equivalent to a crime. Not only don't you have to give them this money, but you need to get back the money that you gave them in the previous biennium for what they did. when you look at the email here, you see that in attachment number two, Mike Edgerly says he received the information and the announcement. So I ask you, you probably need to ask them, why in 7 months, from January until the DFL primary, and I was up in Duluth at the primary, I had a booth there that we paid hundreds of dollars for, spent a lot of money for the weekend, nobody reported it. From people that have known me for decades, whether it was Doug Groh or Patricia Lopez and the rest of the bunch. Giving $11,400,000 to Minnesota Public Radio and Twin Cities Public Television for having lied and cheated the people of Minnesota by blacking me out. You can't deny that. The evidence is clear. I have the emails, the news releases, and you need to find out why they did that. But they can't have the public's money. You can't take taxpayer, hard-earned money and give it to these people that have lied and cheated the people of Minnesota.
Not Mr. Davis, I'm a little uncomfortable here with you accusing.
Well, I know you're uncomfortable. That's why you didn't answer my mail from February. Of course you're uncomfortable.
I knew that I would be seeing you here.
Pardon me?
This is, I don't know if this is a form to accuse people of lying and cheating or organizations of lying and cheating.
Well, they're lying and cheat by omission. You don't have to do it by a direct lie. They cheated the people in Minnesota because they thought they reported the campaign for governor. So by omission, they cheated the people of Minnesota.
Actually, Mr. Davis, you say that you have filed charges. You have, well, you have a complaint filed against them.
Well, I got a complaint with you, too, that is not going to give them the money. Do you believe that they didn't report anything about me in 7 months? Do you believe, Ferdinand, do you believe that they got these news releases by fax and email and phone and newspaper association?
Representative Lilly?
Mr. Chair, I'm not an attorney, but I know a few around here. We have a few on our team. So one of the things that they always mention, I don't know if there's active litigation on this case, but I'm always uncomfortable as legislators if we comment and swaying.
Well,
that's kind of what you were.
What I was trying to get to that. This is not a forum to put these people on trial. If you have a complaint that you have registered and you are going through a process, there are, as you know, ways to deal with this if they are actually lying or cheating. But, you know, this is not the forum to do that.
Well, this is one of the forums to speak to these people. You're giving them $11,400,000 of taxpayer money, and I'm presenting to you, excuse me, to you the attachments that they received. This is Mr. Edgerly's email to me. He's one of the officials at Minnesota Public Radio. He said he received my information, and he didn't report anything in 7 months. I was a bona fide registered candidate, known for decades in Minnesota for my work, registered with the Campaign Finance Disclosure Board, then registered with the Secretary of State, and they reported nothing about it. Doesn't that disturb you? Don't you feel deprived of not knowing all the candidates, who's running for office, and how did you vote if you didn't know? Well, you weren't concerned because you're Republican. This was in the DFL. So I ran in Republicans in 2010. Minnesota Public Radio has a track record of me. So when I call them liars and cheats, I don't do that easily. This is not a happy time for me. I've moved on with my life from the politics to take care of my business and my family. But when I saw that you're giving this kind of money to people, this behavior, I have to come down here and you have to rescind that. And you have to take that out of here. You can't be giving them that money. That's the bottom line of my testimony today. The proof is here in the attachments. Mr. Scheck wrote, did some stories about drugs and marijuana and things like that, and you know that Minnesota passed that pretty meaningless medical marijuana legislation. And I have a drug plan and program. They didn't want to bring that out. And the question is, why not? So to give them money to continue that kind of behavior would be, as criminal as what they did. What do you think?
Well, Mr. Davis, you know, I'm not, first of all, I knew that you were running. I must have learned it somewhere. But, you know, I'm not an attorney. I'm not going to make a judgment on this. When you have a case that you are pursuing, I would be interested in hearing from NPR or public television. But, I will discuss that with them.
Shouldn't you do that with the legislative auditor or whatever powers you have? Are you going to get, conspiracy to do a person harm is a crime. Are you going to give $11,400,000 of taxpayer money to criminals? Which they are. They didn't report it. You didn't hear it on public radio or TPT. And they're getting taxpayer money and tax-deductible contributions. So get them out of the bill.
Well, Mr. Davis, they have been convicted of nothing. This might be a different case had you come to me with evidence that there has been some type of finding against them. Or
you make the finding against them. I gave you a letter on February 19th, and only because of the courtesy and the hard work of Ms. Pat did I hear anything back from anybody. I delivered a packet to all the committee members on March 19th.
Mr. Davis, I received your letter. I responded to Ms. Patton and asked something be set up with you to come before the committee. So you have been given this forum.
Right. So it's up to you, as the chairman of this committee and a person responsible for the taxpayer's purse, to protect the taxpayer's purse. So if I'm making an allegation that you're uncomfortable, you say, whoa, maybe this is true. Maybe I didn't come here with a whole bunch of lies and made up, and maybe all these emails are some piece of fantasy, and news releases and receipts for the press release sent out by the Minnesota Newspaper Association. So as people responsible for protecting the public purse, somebody comes before you with allegations of crime. Conspiracy to harm a person is a crime. Don't you think you need to look into that? You want me to go and do the investigation? I'm the victim. You people need to go and do the investigation. You have legislative orders, you got state patrol, you got all kinds of guns and bullets. You need to go do that. But you can't give taxpayer money to criminals. And a conspiracy to harm a person is a crime. You got your lawyer here. Ask the lawyer. Let her look up conspiracy. And that's what they did. They blacked me out for a particular reason, and they did that to protect Governor Dayton.
Well, again, until they are convicted of a crime, you can't call them criminals.
I can call them.
I guess you can, but,
I've already called them. I've called them. I charge them with the crime. I'm telling you that they're criminals, and I'm providing you with evidence.
I don't even know what the law is in terms of what level of political candidates have to be reported. I mean, there are standards, I know, on debates where if you don't receive a certain percentage, you are not invited to the debate. I don't know what the standards are in these other issues. I will have a discussion with the...
Well, I wasn't questioning being in a debate. I'm not arguing about the Star Tribune or private corporations deciding to do whatever they want, but these are not private corporations. These are tax-exempt people. You know what they say at Minnesota Public Radio? They put out all this literature about their integrity and the scholarship and the dedication of the truth and honesty. Well, what do you think about that, that they blacked out my name for 7 months? And I've interviewed in the past with Gary Eichen. They know very well who I am. Pagliarini, the chair or the head of Twin Cities Public Television, who, by the way, makes about $330,000 a year, probably only about $300,000 more a year than you folks do, and you're giving him $11 million, he's getting $8,400,000 for his corporation.
Well, Mr. Davis, I thank you for your passionate opinion on this. We will have a discussion about it, but we're going to move on now. Thank you.
Sure. You want to have an investigation from the legislative auditor? Maybe they can help you out with that. But how do you get the money out of the bill? How do I go about getting the money out of the bill so they don't get rewarded for their conspiracy to harm a person?
How?
Yeah.
You would
I'm asking you to get
legislators to vote no.
I'm asking, that's what I'm asking you folks to do, to vote no, to take them out of the bill, the $8,400,000 for Twin Cities Public Television and $3 million for Minnesota Public Radio for conspiracy to do a person harm. I can't be any clearer than that. You want evidence? I've got evidence. I've provided you with the emails. They knew I was running. They got press releases, and they did not report. That's a fact.
Well, thank you, Mr. Davis.
Okay, so you're going to vote now on that? Take the money out?
No. We're not going to vote now.
When are you going to vote to take the money out?
I can't say that we are going to vote to take the money out. There is no amendment to that provision. There are other steps in the process. It's not going to be voted on to take it out today, and it may not ever. But there are other stops in this process where it could happen.
Where would that be, that the money taken out? I want to make sure that they don't get rewarded for what they did.
Mr. Davis, I'm sorry. We're done right now, okay? I'm going to move on. Thank you.
Okay. Where are you going to move on to?
I'm going to move on to the next person on my agenda here who wishes to speak on the cultural heritage part.
So you're going to look into this?
I told you that I would talk to TPT and NPR about this.
Oh, good deal. Thank you. I'll be back in touch with you. Thanks a lot for your patience.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Michelle Furin. I'm the director at Como Park Zoo and Conservatory, and I did not bring the parrot this time with me since it was out of order last time. I'm very disrespectful to you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. We have disciplined him for his outburst as he was leaving the hearing.
I've dealt with worse since then.
You have a tough act to follow. I think the parrot would have helped.
They might have. Next time.
Continue, please.
I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members of the committee for including Como Park Zoo and Conservatory in your legacy bill. We appreciate the parity that you've provided to competing interests and securing funds to ensure statewide access to cultural experiences. Como has shown a great past success utilizing legacy funds to produce high-touch education programs as well as deliver quality and interesting experiences to the masses. Como has been a good steward of the legacy dollars since the beginning and has been able to leverage private dollars with our help with our nonprofit partner, Como Friends. More than 425,000 school-age kids attend our STEM-focused education experiences and programming at Como Zoo each year. With these legacy dollars, Como will continue our very popular Little Explorers program and expand our residency program so that all Minnesota school districts have the opportunity to participate. We will also improve access and historic preservation, increasing additional STEM-based education opportunities, and improving habitat improvements like our big cats so that we can better serve families and school groups. All of these programs offer free access for thousands of people from around the state to arts and cultural heritage that would not be possible without the funds of the legacy bill. The state's investment expands education support so all Minnesota residents, regardless of income, can participate. We provide and are proud of a free zoo that is the top cultural destination in Minnesota, serving over 2 million visitors each year. I want to thank you again for your continued support and investment to Como Zoo, and available for any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. And bring your parrot again next time. Anyone else under cultural heritage? Here we go. Good afternoon. Identify yourself, please.
Joan Wilshire, Executive Director of the Minnesota State Council on Disability. Thanks for letting me come up here and speak just briefly about and thanking you right up front for the $60,000 that you're looking to have us work with the History Center on the continued looking for the celebration of the ADA Act here and furthermore and every year after. And we'd like you also to reconsider perhaps funding just two other areas that was in our initial proposal to you. And the first one would be the funds for the TPT live broadcast out to the state during our Employment for People with Disabilities Awareness Month in October. That is a $50,000 request. And then our second area that we'd like you to have to for consideration is the disability viewpoints area. Mark Hughes was just here earlier. He's the executive producer for that cable TV show. And this is one of the very few outreach areas to the community that we do. And it would be fabulous to get the funding for it. For the captioning is needed for those who are deaf and hard of hearing. And just being able to get it continued back onto the Metro Cable Channel as well. And that's a $34,000 request. So, again, we thank you for your support. You know, we received funds just in the last biennium for the first time ever. So we're excited to be moving that forward. And we look forward to however you can be working with us in the future.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Well, thank you very much for your comments. Anyone else who wishes to testify under cultural heritage? Then we will move on to amendments if there's no one else who wishes to comment on the bill. Right, amendments. Here we go. Let's do them quickly and efficiently, but well thought out and debated. The first amendment we have, I will move on behalf of Representative Baker, A20, $100,000 each year for grant to Kajug for the FONCA program. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Presenting a bill here today, or the amendment, A20, to again fund the $100,000 per year for the Kajug program. Youth and arts culture, the Somalian community needs some help to kind of stay focused on keeping youth focused on good areas, good programs that are currently in existence. And if my expert is here today, Mr. Harris, I don't see if he's here, but Andy's here too. So if there's any other questions, we want to keep it efficient for you. I know we were in front of the committee before earlier today. So this amendment just changes it from an earlier number down to $100,000 a year. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and we stand for questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Then I will move the amendment again. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
The next, A4, Representative Kahn.
Chairman, this is one of the basic issues that that we should deal with in terms of making sure that legacy money does not do anything detrimental to the atmosphere. And I do think the one of the highest problems that we have right now is the problems of things that are lethal to pollinators. So I would just move, and clearly we should not be using legacy funds to extend lethality to pollinators. So I'd move this amendment.
Further discussion on the pollinator amendment. No comments? Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, first off, this amendment has appeared in some other scenarios this session and been eliminated from other bills. One of the issues is that when establishing new habitat, we don't want to restrict the use of certain seeds that may be available only in a treated form, and this amendment really is unnecessary, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kahn.
I don't know that there aren't any cases in which we can't find something that's more benign than the pollinator lethal insecticide.
All
this
right.
is, remember, this isn't banning it in the state. This is just looking at legacy planting lands, and legacy planting ought to have a higher standard than other forms of planting in the state.
All right, further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. The noes have it. The amendment fails. Next one is A5, Representative Kahn.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, this was a very puzzling amendment to me because, the fact that I need to offer it. Last year, last session, I guess it was, I tried to touch a few words that were in the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Act, and I got roundly roosted out for doing it. In fact, I think I still have the record of 9 negative editorials against me from Dennis Anderson, which I think is a world record that will not be soon touched. And so this was in the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Act originally. It was of the 45 projects, I think this was rated 15th among those 45 projects. And for some reason it got taken out along the way. And for some more surprising reason, I guess maybe it's just that I attract negativity in a way that other people don't, there was never any word from all of the people who protested against me touching the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage recommendations. So I think this was, as I said, it was high on their list. It was removed in a later committee for no good reason, and I would suggest that we put it back here.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Any comments from anyone else? All right. Seeing no other comments, those in favor of A5, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
You know, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to object to the way you're doing it, but it's a little, the purpose of a committee is to have debate.
I know that
you didn't do anything wrong, but I just, talking to members of the committee who are voting no on something, would be awfully nice if one person could say one word about why they're voting no, so that we could go on with the process.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. And I did look to the side of the room where I thought maybe there'd be some no votes. And
I'm just particularly because there are new members on the committee. I just think it would be awfully nice for some people to give some explanation. You just don't vote yes and no on things, particularly for something which has kind of as a portentous reasons for no votes. I don't want to talk about racism and anti-Native Americanism, but it would have been nice to have heard some reasons about why people were voting no.
I don't think that is any reason at all why anyone voted the way they did or voted no. And I will just say that this is the second time that this has come. You had this amendment before, and I believe there was more of a discussion the previous time.
The discussion was kind of, you know, the major point I heard in the discussion the other time was that the only reason for doing it is what it would cost in PILT money, of which I think the amount was, I'm not sure these numbers are exactly right, but I think it was about $1.50 per person in the county per year. I mean, people probably in that county don't like to have things equated to cups of Starbucks, but certainly it was much less.
They don't
than
have any Starbucks in Clearwater County.
I know, much less than a meal at McDonald's or something like that. It's just, I wish we could have some reasonable discussion about some of these issues. So, anyway.
Well,
which I'm sure they did at the point when it was added into the proposal. And if someone can explain why when I try to do something to the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Act, I get roundly trashed for it, but somehow this is perfectly okay. Just a comment, Mr. Chairman.
No, thank you, Representative Kahn. I appreciate the comment. If you want to continue your streak, Representative Todd.
Well, it can't get any worse, so.
A6.
Okay. This is, again, trying to help with the issue of pollinators and the issue of the habitat improvements. Again, I think monarch butterflies are probably one of the species which is most beneficial to the to everything, to the natural resource atmosphere in the state. And I think it's about to go on the endangered and threatened list. So I think we should be trying to do. Minnesota is a very good place for them, a very good stop on the way, and I think we ought to be doing something to help them.
Well, thank you, Representative Kahn. Any discussion, comments? Then I will say, you know, on this one, you know, we did think, I agree with you that something should be mentioned regarding milkweed, but not at this point taking funding from Outdoor Heritage. And that
well,
is
Mr.
why
Chairman.
We do have the A19 amendment, which I think yeah. is a fair chance of passing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll point out that this doesn't take any money. This just adds, takes some money from the bottom line, which you've already done in another case. So it's not unheard of to do that, and it still leaves our reserve a bit leave above the 5% that we should have. And even though I appreciate what you're trying to do, I think this is a little bit more, I think the monarch butterflies would appreciate this one a little bit more.
Further discussion? Those in favor of A6 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The noes have it. Now, next one. A19, Representative Kahn, if you want to move that, I think there's a chance your streak will end.
Why end it? Why don't you move it and I'll support it?
Then I'll move A19.
And the
purpose is just to give a nod to Representative Kahn and her concern for monarch butterflies. The fact that it is a good idea, I think, were feasible to plant milkweed. Any further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? That one passed. And now back to Representative Kahn. Representative Torkelson?
Mr. Chair, sorry I didn't get this in soon enough, but you know, if we want to really promote this plant, perhaps we should change its name
to hemp?
Milkweed to, I don't know,
I've got another one that...
Milk something else. Milk flower?
Maybe milk plant. Hemp.
What's that?
Milk hemp?
I've got another one that covers that.
Okay. Representative Kahn, A7.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, this was something that we had. This was something I was very surprised to see taken out of the bill. I think it was in the recommendations from the Clean Water Council originally, but just came out of the bill. This is something that we did, and maybe I can have, I don't know if there's someone here from the Conservation Corps, maybe they could speak to it, but this is something that we had in the last bill, and and Conservation Corps is something that I used to support when it was part of state government. It then became a private organization, but it's incredibly cost effective in two ways. It's cost effective for the amount of it's cost effective for the delivery of the kind of job, and besides, if you look at the history and the action of the Conservation Corps, it's a very cost effective way to get kids that are possibly in some danger involved in the outdoors and in doing things. And it's no additional cost. They had no trouble meeting the goal with a specific language. Instead of saying maybe use them, it really helps them to set their plans. So I would urge, I don't know. Yeah, there is someone from the Conservation Corps here. Maybe they could talk about what they did in the past year.
If Mr. Price wants to make his way down, they can do that. Representative Miller, you have your hand up.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn. A couple questions, and you may have to answer the first one, but is there anything that keeps the Clean Water Fund, at this time from using them if they so choose? Is there anything keeping them from doing that at this time?
Representative Kahn?
We'll let Mr. Price speak, but the point is having a specific language in there, knowing that this worked very well in the last appropriation, I just see no need to take it out.
Let me just...
And I think the Clean Water... I think the original bill had it in. I think it was taken out later in the process. I don't want to be taken, held totally accountable for everything I say, but I think that would
be dangerous.
I know.
Representative Kahn, just let me add here that there are three other places in the bill where the Conservation Corps of Minnesota is cited with various words, must, shall, and may, in three different places differently apply to the Conservation Corps. So they are in the bill, just not in the Outdoor Heritage section. Am I correct, Mr. Price?
I think.
Am I correct with that?
Glenn Price, Executive Director of Conservation Corps, Minnesota. To answer your question first, Mr. Chairman, this is part of the Clean Water Bowser portion of the bill. And when the first legacy bill was put together, language was inserted like this so that we could, as an organization, contract for services with the individual grantees that get a Bowser grant under the clean water portion of the legacy programs. So this process has worked for 3 years very successfully. In the clean water or in the Bowser report to the legislature about how this has worked, they outlined the process by which they show us the people who have gotten the grant. We look at the list and say, no, we can't do this because we don't have the skills or the equipment or the ability to do that, but we can do these projects and we would love to contract for services with those grantees. And so then within certain timelines, that process is consummated, and then we do the work. I provided a couple of members, including Representative Torkelson and Representative Erdahl, with the last four go-rounds of appropriation showing how this money was appropriated across the state, the recipients of the grant, and it's worked very well. I was very pleased when Representative Torkelson included this exact language in this amendment as the bill moved through the House Environment Finance Committee, and then it came here, and when he went to include it in House File 303, he had a delete amendment which went back to the old language of may provide services. So we're asking that you would consider reinstating the language you see in the amendment because it works. It makes it easier for us to plan for the seasons of work, and it makes it easier for Bowser to implement the program mission that they have with these grants.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sure that this in no way is an intention to in any way cast any shadow whatsoever on the Conservation Corps and the fine work they've done over the years for the state of Minnesota and the fine work that Senator Price has done representing them here at the Capitol. But it does the language does represent an earmark that I believe is unneeded. I shouldn't say inappropriate. I should say it's just unnecessary because their work speaks for itself. They will, I'm sure, be, I shouldn't say I'm sure because I'm not sure of anything really, but I would anticipate that they will continue to be successful in the future based on their past performance, and I congratulate them again for the fine work they've done. But I will stand by my recommendation that we do not put this earmark in the bill.
Representative Kahn?
Mr. Chairman, there's one thing about taking out something that's been successful, as Mr. Price said, for the last 3 years, and putting something new in. And as he said, having the specific number there is very helpful for their planning. You know, he did an amazing success in changing what had been a state-funded organization until it was taken out and turning it into an extremely workable organization in the private entity, and in fact expanding. It's now, I gather, called conservation. They're being picked up by our neighbors in Iowa too, to work there now. And I just think that there's no excuse to take something out that's worked well and just say, well, just leave it to chance from now on.
Thank you, Representative Kahn, and I've had no problems over the years with the work done by the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. I would like to read from the bill, line 67.15 under Department of Natural Resources. The commissioner shall contract for services with Conservation Corps of Minnesota for restoration, maintenance, and other activities under this section for at least $1 million the first year and $1 million the second year. There's another provision in here dealing with the under the Historical Society, but that one is different. It says, must give consideration to Conservation Corps of Minnesota and Northern Bedrock Conservation Corps or an organization carrying out similar work. The point I'm making is at various places in this bill, using various verbs, there are directions given regarding the Conservation Corps. So, well, Representative Kahn.
All of those are a little better than the language in 21 to 24. And if you want to talk about a legacy that really means something, the legacy that goes into the kind of training of young people that the Conservation Corps does is something this committee ought to enhance and ought to be proud of. And I guess I wouldn't hesitate if I were the one starting with this amendment at this time, but I'm not. I'm just saying we should continue past practices that have been successful, both for the projects and both for the group itself.
Thank you. Representative Murphy. Do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, I support this amendment because of the wonderful work that was done at the Safe Harbor at McQuaid Road by the Conservation Corps of Minnesota, and that's one of my favorite spots to stop halfway between my end of my district and going up to Two Harbors, the other end of my district. And the McQuaid Road Safe Harbor area is like a park, and the Conservation Corps made it that way.
Thank you, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I would speak in favor of this amendment, too. Although I appreciate the Chair's comments and Representative Torrelson's about the value of the program, and I happen to have an opportunity. It wasn't in my district, but it was fairly close, and where they were working on a project just to watch, and so you kind of got a sense of who was out there, and it's some of what Representative Kahn just said. It's young folks that are actually out there doing the work, and it was kind of exciting in that sense just to see them and the energy that they brought to the project. And in this case, they were like doing a fishing pier or something of that sort, and pretty labor intensive, but it was something that you could tell that they were enjoying. But I believe there's an effort made to get some folks that are maybe disadvantaged, and so that's why I just kind of see this as unfortunate, because if for example, if you're looking at the program and you know where the money, if the money's coming, you just can kind of plan for that, and you can go into schools perhaps and colleges and actually do some recruiting and kind of be more proactive, and kind of instead of waiting and hoping that it does indeed come. And it actually, this, the timing might be a little late for the spring, because I know, you know, we're going out to Boston for my daughter's graduation here in about a week, and so these kids are, you know, leaving schools, and I hate to see us miss that window of hiring and opportunities for kids and folks to do these sort of things. So that's why I would like to see it remain the way it was before and support the amendment. So thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The amendment fails.
Thank you.
Next one, A11. Representative Kahn, you want to try again?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, we've already talked about the importance of the work of the Council of Disabilities. This was, I took the original amendment that they brought to me and modified it a little bit. You know, it was kind of, the amendment that they brought to me was kind of just absolute. Every project should do that. And one of the things I'm a little concerned about, even though I believe in disability access, is when we're doing things like a mountain bike trail or climbing a mountain or something like that, that we would look at the problems of that we would say, well, we can't do it because there's no way we can have this be meaningful and have it be access to people with disabilities. But I think this language is wimpy enough so that it should be okay for us to put in. And
thank
I guess
you.
I put it into each section. The only change I would like to make, if you would allow it at this time, is that I'd like to put in some reference to discussion with the count to involvement of the council with of disability, whatever it's called.
Do you have a specific wording that
someone
Ms. Malone would
me.
Like to write down for us?
Just a sentence that would say consultation with the council. Sorry about that. It was just suggested to me today by people.
Can you add something there, Ms. Mullen?
So you can tell me if this makes sense. Chair and representatives, starting on page 1, line 4 of the amendment, the A11 amendment, it could read subdivision 10 disability access where appropriate grant recipients in consultation with the council on disabilities on disability. Not plural.
Yeah. All right, is that
yes, that's
okay.
What I want. And then we go in each of the four places.
So in discussion on this amendment, I don't want to shock you, Representative Kahn, but I think this is a good one.
Well, I got it.
It's going to break
one out of ten, so it's bad.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It passed.
Wow. Okay.
And now, A18. Representative Kahn.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, again, this is a program that we've had in the bill before. One of the things that because of my upbringing, I kind of like to look at data and statistics and information more than a lot of people do. But I think that this is a really, you know, this is started to be a really effective way to access what's being done by the Legacy Committee. I know I understand that some of the partners don't like it, and I actually think that we should consider that as a recommendation for this, because transparency is something that's always opposed by the people who think that they're going to suffer for transparency. What this does is gives us some more transparency. I would urge people to meet with the people, particularly who work with the Minnesota. I've had a long history in this. I was responsible for the very first grant that started MnGeo when I was a member of LCMR in those days. And again, this is if you want transparency, you want more information, unless something else comes up, I really think that this is the way to go. There's a competing project. I would certainly welcome looking at competition for it. I don't know of any, though.
Representative Miller?
Mr. Chair, Representative, as they say, these are one of these questions where I really don't know the answer. So,
which you're told never to ask.
no one ever told me to do anything, Representative Kahn. But when I read this, I get a little bit confused of who enters the information into this mapping system.
Representative Kahn?
Mr. Chairman, I think there are people here who might be able to answer that better than me. I think it comes from NGO, are the people who put it, you know, I mean, they're giving it to so forth, but maybe we could have, I don't know if Mary Vogel is here or a person from NGO is
Ms.
here.
Ms. Vogel, would you care to answer that question?
If someone could.
Welcome. Identify yourselves, please.
I'm Mae Davenport from the University of Minnesota, an associate professor and the director of the Center for Changing Landscapes.
I'm Mary Vogel, and I'm co-director of the Center for Changing Landscapes and project leader for the last couple rounds.
You have Representative Miller's question. Would you care to answer?
Who enters the data?
Mr. Chair, just to clarify.
Representative Miller?
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, not who physically enters it, but like you gather data from somebody who makes, you know, I'm assuming this is, we use this park all the time, we don't use it all the time, we use it once a year frequently or whatever the surveying may be. So who are the people that are basically, where are you gaining the information from? Who are those people?
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, this sounds like a question about the user survey and who would enter the survey data into a data management system. Is that correct?
Perhaps, yes.
Representative Miller?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, perhaps, yes. I'll hear the answer.
Continue, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, the survey tool is designed to be implemented at park and trail units across Minnesota, including greater Minnesota, to gather information that hasn't been gathered in the past. The data would be entered one of two ways. If it's a paper format of the survey, then that would take data entry service of the system or of the unit manager, even volunteers that could enter data. We have developed a tablet version of the survey using a software program that's available, which automatically enters the data into a database. So there are two options to the survey, and if the three systems so choose to use a tablet survey, those data are automatically entered into a database.
Got all that now?
Got all that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any other questions of testifiers? Right. Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Vogel, has the money that you've received in the past been spent?
Ms.
Vogel?
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl and Representative Murphy, we are approaching spending the money that has been appropriated in the past. To give you a little background about this project, I was asked by the legislature to do this project to create a context for parks and trails decision making. That there was a real concern that the best information available would be helpful in deciding whether whether projects should be funded or not, and that was number one. Number two was the name of our project was Minnesota's Network of Parks and Trails, and there was a recognition that we have parks and trails that are federal, that are local, that are state, regional, and regional. So our project is called Minnesota's Network of Parks and Trails. It does not confine itself to the three systems. We are also in the process of creating a system so that local people can access the project, the database, and add their information so that we will have a seamless federal to local system of data.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Kahn?
Well, I don't know how many of you have done as much navigating around the state by bicycle as I have, but when you get except for, well, he just takes the main roads. He's not as wimpy as I am. But when you get a DNR map, it kind of just shows you DNR trails. And there may be a very usable trail right next to it, and that's funded by some other source. And this is the thing that brings them together into one usable entity for everyone to be able to use. So I think this is continuing. This is a really good idea. If any of you have looked at any of the detailed mapping, or I'm sure you could get some information about what's available in your area and the directions in which they've moved, then I think this is, for the amount of money that we're spending on these legacy projects, this is a very small amount of money to see what they're doing and to have it accessible to the public to see what we're doing.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Thank you, testifiers. Any other discussion? Those in favor of, what number are we? A18. Signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
That fails. Next one, A15, Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know this isn't any kind of a funding one. I know it refers to one of the things that people said. This is one of the buffer vegetation guidelines, and it wasn't clear with all of the interest in perennial, in talking about perennial plants. Well, this is one of the ones that we're going to start, one of the interesting plants that hopefully by the end of this session, if Representative Franzen and I have our way, is that we're going to see planting as industrial hemp. And industrial hemp...
Might be a buffer?
Yes, it is an annual, but it has many of the characteristics of the kinds of perennials that you'd want. And a farmer who planted their buffer strips in industrial hemp and could harvest it might make a far greater profit than anything that they're planting in non-buffer right now. And this language, without being very aggressive, would allow that.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. I think that we could support this. Further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Another Kahn amendment passes. Representative Kahn.
Oh.
A16.
Now, this is an issue which I have gotten a lot of flack from the people who usually support me, which is the issue of the payment in lieu of taxes. But I think talking, in fact, I did sign as a co-author of the Drazkowski bill.
Another Kahn Drazkowski bill, yes.
Uniformly trashed and by most of the people who usually support me. But I think that we really, you know, that we are seeing some resistance to legacy projects in part of the states where they're very concerned about the amount of public land and the loss of tax funds. This doesn't mandate anything. It just says that let's start looking at it. And my thought of what we should do is when there's a legacy problem that seems to create a pilt, something that could be helped with pilt, with a pilt appropriation in an area, that we should look at the possibility of putting an additional amount on that legacy project that would go into a trust fund, not for that project. I'd put it into all the projects like that that would then be allowed to remain in place and accumulate interest and be used for pilt payments. Obviously, I know almost nothing about taxes, almost nothing about funds. I should say just nothing about that. So I didn't want to devise it. So that's why I think there are enough wimpy words in this to think that it doesn't compel anybody to do anything, but just put the subject in to be looked at for legacy.
Thank you, Representative Kahn and Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, I fully support this, and I fully support what you and Representative Drazkowski were trying to do. There are some things, as I become educated this first year, in legacy and how these funds are spent. I think you and I actually agree on quite a few things, so I would look forward to working with you. And she seemed annoyed by that. Just a little bit. I never got a response like that.
President Miller, this is on the record. Really.
I know. Well, that's why I wanted to say it out loud, because she didn't say anything. She just kind of gave me that sneer. So, Mr. Chair and Representative, what I'm saying is I actually there are some things that I'd like to work on in the future with Legacy, and I think we should work together because I believe that there's a lot of good things that we can do.
I don't know if I like that suggestion.
Nicest thing anybody said all day. So.
But
Mr. Chair,
any other comments on this? I mean, I'm actually, now that I'm convinced by Representative Miller, inclined to believe that looking at something and different ways of doing things is not a bad thing to do. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
How many did you get there, Representative Kahn? That's like
more than usual.
Might be at least three. And now, our last amendment, I think. And wait, now, was there a technical one that we had? We did that? No, what? The oral amendment you had? Let's look at that now.
Chair and Representatives, on page 81, line 27, there's a typo in the amount that's provided for the Historic Recognition Grants Program. This change would just make these numbers mirror what's on the spreadsheet. The first number is $1,875,050, and it should be $1,875,000. There should be no 50. And the same for the second number. It should be $1,475,000.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen. I will move that as an oral amendment. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed. And now,
what are we going to do with the extra $100?
I have lots of suggestions. I'm sure that a library wants it somewhere. All right, Representative Freiberg, A17.
Sure. This relates to the Purpose Center for Arts Education. The Purpose Center asked for approximately $3.6 million. I recognize there's no entitlements in the Legacy Committee. There's no such thing as a cut. However, the amount of the funds was requested was thought out carefully by the Purpose Center. Teachers in the Purpose, they were funded in previous years for this integration project, including in the Northeast region of the state. They have only finished 1 year of that project. It was intended to be a 3-year project, so they need to continue for both years of the upcoming biennium to complete the program. As I'm sure you know, Chair Erdahl, teacher professional development needs to be for multiple years to have a lasting impact. Some research says 5 years. They requested a 3-year program as a conservative approach out of recognition that this is, you know, a funding source with no guarantees. And it's a model that was used in the Lakes Country and in the Southeast region. But there are also new programs requested under that funding. They want to pilot an online version of the project in a new region. And then as far as the Turnaround Arts program goes, they would like to add 4 more schools in the second year of the biennium. And as you may recall from their presentation before the committee, towards the beginning of session, it's selected from schools in the lowest 5% on their statewide scores. The amendment doesn't actually, you know, in recognition of the limited funds we have available at this point, the amendment doesn't actually request the full amount either, I should also mention. So I would request the committee's consideration.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Any comments from anyone? Let me just say that, you know, as I said earlier to others, you know, this is a process. I'm going to recommend that we stay where we are today. But as we go through the process, I expect that there will be some changes, and, you know, this could be possibly one of those. So, let you know that that's where I am at this point. Other further discussion? Those in favor of A17, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. That one fails as well. But and now, what? Oh, yes. I get my crib sheet. I now renew my motion to refer House File 303 as amended to the Tax Committee for the Committee on Taxes, where Representative Davids is eagerly awaiting it because Greg Davids cares. Is there any further discussion on the bill as amended at this point? Representative Kahn.
Does that mean I'm supposed to bring my amendments to him, too?
No.
You know, he sits pretty close to me.
Yes,
Mary
he does.
Murphy and me on
yes,
the House
floor. Kahn.
Spends a lot of time listening to us. Well, Mr. Chairman, it's hard to criticize this bill. I know that you've put a lot of work into it. I know that there are a lot of competing forces behind it. I'm sorry that you didn't take the few chances I gave you to make it a little bit better.
I took some chances, though.
But as you said, we'll keep working on it. There's one issue that's kind of come up to a lot of prominence, and maybe we need to do a better division of funds, and that's the restoration of the art in the Capitol. And I agreed with you that it was appropriately an arts project, but I also think it's appropriately a historical society project. And I think maybe we ought to be looking at a better division of the funding for how that's done.
Well, Representative Kahn, as I said, there is a process, and frankly, I could see at the end of the day at least several ways that could go.
Okay. Well, I agree that it's very important to do. I agree that it's a very important part of the legacy of the state. Maybe at some point we'll see that the development of younger people in the state is also an important part of the legacy of the state, but we'll move on.
Well, Representative Kahn, I want to assure everyone that one of my prime goals is still that the Capitol be finished totally, that the fine art, that the other art in the building, whatever, the water problems that we have, all get done. And I'm confident that that will happen. Any other discussion on the bill? Then I have renewed my motion that it be referred to the Tax Committee. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. The bill passes. And, well, King, this case is closed.